The January 19th general meeting. First order of business will be open the book. And Pledge of Allegiance. Join me, please.
Ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Things are good. It's going to start raining tonight through Monday. Let it be known that we have a quorum. All five board members are here. And Gail Robinette, again, great to have you on the board.
Thank you.
Report from closed session.
Nothing to report, Mr. President.
All righty. Sheriff's report.
Good afternoon. Have the start with the ending year stats for 2011 for Cambria and what's known as Beat 3, which is the Sheriff's Department's biggest beat. It's about 600 square miles. It starts from the edge of Morro Bay, goes all the way to the county line, and then goes inland to Santa Rosa Creek and Old Creek Road. So it's about 600 square miles. On any given day shift, we have one deputy available with one car. Last year, Cambria had 3,292 calls for service. San Simeon had 692 calls for service, and Cayucas had 1,862 calls for service, for a total of 4,846 calls for service in the year, averaging just over 10 calls per day for this area. So that deputy that was assigned up here is handling, in a 24-hour period between the three cars, about 10 calls a day. We had one major case that's been solved. We're still an ongoing investigation, so I can't talk too terribly much about it, but it is a burglary that happened here in Cambria. It was in the paper. We do have two folks in custody, two females. It's an ongoing investigation. We did recover, my guesstimation would be 90 to 95% of the property that had been taken and returned to the family. There's a couple of items that are still outstanding, so the detectives, along with some of our field personnel, are continuing that investigation. So, but it has come to a good conclusion so far. February 16th is going to be a town hall meeting in San Simeon. Meet the sheriff at the Cavalier, 6:30 in the evening at the Cavalier Cove Room, which is at 250 San Simeon Road. 6:30 to 8:30, all residents from Cayucas, Cambria, and San Simeon are welcome. The sheriff will be the guest speaker. Other services will be Supervisor Gibson's office will be there, CAL FIRE, Code Enforcement, the Food Bank Coalition, Employment Development, and RTA. So a great opportunity for folks in our communities to come out to that location and talk to the emergency services as well as some of the other agencies in the county. If they have questions or concerns, they can bring them up directly to the people of those services. I heard a great quote from Mr. Gruber today that said, don't take paradise for granted. And on that note, we were discussing locking the front door. He reminds his wife frequently to lock the front door. I thought that would be a great kind of segue into the fact that we do have people out there, especially with this burglary, that walk around and just try front doors. They try car doors. They simply wait for someone to make that slip, that mental slip, and leave a door open, and then they're in your car and they're in your house. So a friendly reminder from Sheriff's Office that it's pretty simple to push the button on the back or turn the key, and that's going to prevent a lot of issues, so whether they're in your house when you're there or not. So lock your doors and your cars. And then one other thing is we are rolling out our new Chevy Caprices. We have some new vehicles coming out. I think I've mentioned this before. Obviously, you've seen the Chevy Tahoe that I drive. Also, the Chevy Caprices are coming out. Ford does not make the Crown Victoria anymore, so our last three went to our canine units, which you'll see rolling out in 2 weeks. They're going to be on station. But the Chevy Caprices, so if you've thought you had the headlights down on the on the car. Stand by when you look in your rearview mirror. It may be a different set. So,
County, for the past going on 47 years now, the service that we originally were founded for was Head Start. And Head Start is a great program. We have a program here in Cambria, about a block from here on Main Street. And it is a program for low-income families, generally where both parents are working. And in this program, we enable the family to continue to have both parents work while we provide very high-quality child care and early childhood education for the families. And these families, without this service, would certainly not be able to have both parents working and therefore would be in jeopardy of losing the roof over their heads. Literally over the years, hundreds of Cambria kids have gone through this program. And the greatest fan of Head Start are the greatest fans are your high, elementary school principals and first grade teachers, because when a child finishes the Head Start program, they enter school ready to learn. And with over 40 years of longitudinal studies behind us, we know that Head Start kids have a higher tendency of graduating high school, not being involved with the legal system, going on to have a job, going on to higher education at much higher rates than their peers in the same socioeconomic groups. So it's a highly successful program, and we're very fortunate here in San Luis County because we receive the very highest rating from the federal government for our program. We just finished our triannual review, and we received the highest possible grades for that triannual review. So the program you have here in Cambria is a very high-quality program, and your most low-income kids and families are participating in this program as we speak. The rest of the programs I'm going to discuss with you today, I'd like you to pay close attention to, because I assume with a lot of experience of sharing this before that there are going to be people that you serve or you may know of in your circles that will benefit from these programs, Cambria residents. And there are Cambria residents who are already participating in this program, and I'd like you to know about them. The first program that I want to share with you today is our Adult Services Center, which is in Templeton, but people from the entire county attend this program. It's a program for people with dementia and Alzheimer's disease in which we provide care 5 days a week, 8 to 5, and we provide no barrier for entry in terms of income. So therefore, no matter what you can afford to pay for this program, you can attend the program. You have a program here in Cambria that is here 2 days a week at St. Paul's Episcopal Church that we have visited, and we encourage the folks in that program, the families in that program, to actually take advantage of the program at Templeton, the 3 days a week that the program here in Cambria isn't open. But the program in Cambria and our program in Templeton are the only two non-profit programs that are available to citizens of San Luis County. So it's a great program, and it enables families who have a loved one that they don't want to put in long-term care to remain at home, and they can continue to work and go about their lives during the day, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And we can work with families here in Cambria to solve the transportation issue. The county transportation system is outstanding, and the drivers are excellent, and they will pick up someone here in Cambria, bring them up to Templeton, and bring them back home again. And we'll work with the families to figure out that system. So if you know someone who needs something in this line, if they have someone who's elderly living at home who's starting to slip, this is a great program for them. I want to also share with you our energy program and utility program. Again, this is geared towards low-income families, and we define low-income as a family of one or two who has an income of less than $32,000 a year. So it's pretty broad, and that means most people on fixed income from Social Security are eligible for this program. We will go into someone's home and do a complete energy evaluation. That means everything from soup to nuts, and if we identify any deficits, we are able to fix or replace those deficits. So if it's an HVAC system, it's leaky windows, it's a door that no longer is efficient, we will go in and replace these items, an old leaky refrigerator. We will replace these items at no cost to the homeowner or renter as long as we have the landlord's permission. And in most cases, the program is countywide, and we work with the group of students who are most likely in the United States statistically to drop out of high school, which are teenage moms. And these teen parents receive a lot of counseling and education around how to raise their child and how to stay in school at the same time. And in addition to that, we provide them with a lot of counseling about developing a roadmap for their future. Because in many instances, teen pregnancy is a generational issue, and it can repeat over time. So our goal is to really end the generational repetition of teenage pregnancy and to help the young person who is actively involved in the program stay in school and become a success in life and a success as a parent. And our rates of maintaining young people in school are very dramatic. We more than double the national average of keeping people in school in San Luis Obispo County who are a teen parent. So we're doing a good job. This program has been around for about a quarter century, so it has a long track record of success. And again, dozens of young people from Cambria have participated in this program over the years, over those 25 years. We have a program right here at St. Paul's Episcopal Church once a month. It's an adult health screening program, and that means that anyone who is 18 years of age or older, who is uninsured or underinsured, has access to our nurse right here in Cambria. The day that we come in is the second Monday of the month from 9 to noon. You don't need an appointment. You can just go see our nurse, Heather. She's been doing this for years and years. If you are ill and you need a referral, she knows where to refer you to be seen. And you can receive follow-up care generally through her guidance. She's really very experienced and very knowledgeable about the healthcare system throughout San Luis County, and she's a wonderful asset. And again, any adult 18 or over can go visit our nurse any second Monday of the month at St. Paul's Church from 9 to noon. No appointment needed. And if you require blood work, we can do a basic blood work workup for you for our cost, which is about $20. We just passed that along. If you went to a private lab, you'd pay a couple hundred dollars for that same screening in most cases. So we're able to really help people receive some basic screenings and health care through this program. Great program. Another companion program for health care is called 40 Wonderful. It's really important for women as they approach menopause and in the postmenopausal time frame to get annual screenings, mammograms, pap smears, and a complete gynecological screening. In many instances, it's recommended that that happen annually. So if you're uninsured or underinsured, you can come to our clinic in San Luis or in Arroyo Grande. You're given an appointment. You call for an appointment. You can come in and get a screening. And again, it's either no cost or sliding scale based on your ability to pay. The thing I want to emphasize about all these services that I'm sharing with you today, and particularly the health services, is that you do not get the question, what is your health insurance, when you call our office. You're given an appointment, and you're allowed to see a practitioner. In the case of the program here in at St. Paul's, you just walk in. But you don't need health insurance cards, and you don't need to pay for services if you can't afford them. So it's really an important asset for the people of San Luis County and for the people of Cambria to have this available to them. Final thing I want to share with you today is on the reverse side of your sheet. It's our income tax program, which is just starting up. We provide free tax returns for anyone who makes less than $50,000 a year. We will have a volunteer who's trained, an IRS-trained volunteer, do taxes, and we are going to be offering this here in Cambria. You just call for an appointment, or you can go to regular sites close by in other communities. But you can get your taxes done at no cost. And this is the important piece for our lower-income residents, particularly those who are parents or a single parent with a young child who's under 18 years of age. In certain instances, you're eligible for the earned income tax credit. And that can mean $1,000 or more to a couple $1,000s a year coming into your pocket. Your low income, that's a tremendous amount of money to be able to use for food, rent, or to participate in purchasing things at local businesses. So it's a real...
Besides general contributions, what other resources do you have as far as funding your all your different services that you offer?
We've cobbled together a complete laundry list of funding sources. Wherever we're eligible for funding, we try to receive it. We get federal funding, state funding, county funding. We also get the utility programs are basically funded through the utility companies. That it goes through the state and to us. And we're, by the way, considered one of the best counties in utilizing this. The large counties and the big cities to our north and south don't use the funds that are necessarily allocated to them, so there's rollover funds that are available, and we apply for them, and we make sure we get out into our county and take care of our low-income people, and we're consequently reviewed as one of the top organizations and counties in utilizing those funds. So we're always on top of it. We get a lot of foundation funding as well. We have an outstanding group of folks who work on that, and we also, of course, through the generosity of private funds, we're able to run, in addition to these programs, our homeless shelters in San Luis and some other programs we run that exclusively run on the generosity of individuals here in San Luis County.
Wonderful. Director Barringer?
Yeah, I had a quick question. When you're at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, is Heather, she has a half a day, is she indented or is it a pretty... good balance between Heather's resources and the need?
It's a pretty good balance. She would like to be overwhelmed, so we could try to expand the program. But as it turns out, she does have regular folks who come in to see her. But we're really trying to increase the number of people who utilize her program. And part of the reason I'm out here today and sharing this information is because we want people to use these services. It's easier for us to go to foundations and other sources if our census remains high, especially when it's so competitive now because of the economic downturn for funding between counties and agencies and the like. We want to make sure that we're getting in San Luis County what we should be getting, and therefore we want to make sure that Heather's busier. So yes, she can handle more people, but she does have steady folks who come to see her now.
Gail?
Well, thank you for the information again. It is the very valuable services you provide. Do you happen to know on the Head Start program for the students and the number of students in Cambria, how many students do you serve?
You know, I don't have the exact number. I want to say it's going to be at least a couple dozen in the program currently, but I want to get that number to you, and I can make sure that I get that number to you. I'll email that to Kathy and get the exact census of those numbers. But I want to say there's at least two dozen children enrolled in that program right now, and there's probably more, but I want to be conservative and say about two dozen.
Okay, very good. And what about the adult day services? 2 days in Cambria, do you have an idea of how many participants you have in that?
I want to clarify if I misspoke or I confused people. The program here in Cambria is run locally by a Cambria organization. And we came down to visit the program in Cambria to make sure that we're partnering and letting people know that they can use our service the 3 days a week that you're not open during the work week. But your program, the day I was there, had about eight people in the program that day. But I'm not sure what your census is on a regular basis. Our census up in Templeton is, it varies, of course, but it's about 12 to 15 people on any given day.
Okay. Well, it's a good partnership then. So we have our local, and you're partnering with them for the other 3 days. So, yeah, it's a win-win situation then.
Absolutely. And you have a great program here, too. I just want to give them a plug. They're an outstanding group.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Alan.
Thank you.
It was a great presentation.
Thank you very much.
Next up, public comment, and I have some requests. Ron Crummett, number one.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, members of the board. I want to first congratulate Gail Robinette on her election to the board. I've had the privilege of working with her on a couple of committees, and I think she will give a. She always weighs her answers thoughtfully, and I would classify her as a moderate. Not in, because we need it. And again, good luck, and thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Next up, Paul Carlson.
Ladies and gentlemen of the board, I thank you for this chance to speak to you. And I also would like to congratulate Gail Robinette for her appointment. And I'd like to thank the board for your service under all of the crazy conditions we've had since I've lived here for the past 6.5, 7 years in Cambria. And I think it's important for the board to keep in mind that they have to look at the long range, and they have to look at the needs of people that would like to move here as well as the people that live here. And in developing a proper water plan, it's important to also consider having a plan that will allow for a minimum cost for somebody that uses very little water but yet will charge people that use more water in a proper proportion. One of the things I wanted to mention, talking about the difficulty that we have had in this community accommodating our water needs, is the cost of litigation. And I just checked recently on what's been going on there, like with a case against, or LandWatch's case against CCSD, and the judgment was given on that way back in, I believe, October of 2010. And so I just checked into that, and the CCSD staff was very helpful in advising me of the latest status, which is that it has been appealed by LandWatch. And I think it is important that this is pursued, and as soon as the appeal has been denied, if it is, that CCSD collects that money, because that is the way it should be. And I would like to also say that in my own case, at our household, we have had some problems with our pipes lately and had to make repairs, which is not the fault of the water we're receiving. It's just the way it is. It's what's in the ground. And so there are other significant factors that will play. For example, we're spending $300 a year, which is $25 a month for water treatment. And if we did not have to pay that because we had blended water from a purer water source, that would be a savings that would not be recognized as you plan your long-range costs for water. And with that, I think I will sign off for now, but I think I will be back with much more to say regarding these subjects. For example, in Port Hueneme, I was a treasurer of a condominium complex for many years, and this was during a period of poor water quality in that community, which, by the way, has around 6,500 water connections, and their water was running about 1,000 parts of dissolved solids per liter, and this is way more than, like right now, Cambria is running around 300, according to the last report I saw. So So when they created a new water treatment plant, which includes reverse osmosis, nanofiltration, and electrodialysis, and they've reduced that count of the solids down to 300. And then there's other factors which are corrosiveness, and maybe that's a factor in the water leaks we had. I don't know. I haven't looked at what that level is in Cambria. But these are things that also should be considered when you look at your budget and determine what would be the way to go. But the bottom line is you can't possibly do any of this without completing your tests to come up with a plan for a water treatment or desalinization plant and where it's going to be, because it's impossible to do so otherwise. One other last thing I'd like to say is people in the community have used examples like Santa Barbara. And according to the Santa Barbara Water Department, they discontinued their desalinization plant because they no longer needed it. And it was incorporated in the 1990s due to the fact that they had a drought that they were significantly worried about that caused them to build that plant. And then also it's been said that they sold that plant. Well, the fact is that they had a plant which had two tandem units, and they sold one of the units, and it kind of makes sense. Maybe they had two units so that they could take one offline for service while the other one ran. But so the fact is they are maintaining their desal plant, and that would not be a good example of why you would not want to continue with a desal plant. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. Paul, you had a second check mark, but you crossed out, was it desal? That
yes.
You had is so that you're not going to speak on that issue.
Well, maybe I could reserve
at a later.
I don't know what you're going to discuss there. I do probably have more things I could say.
So you're on for that.
Okay.
Let me write that down. Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Process for the test wells. This might be a really good time to spend some energy and resources doing a survey of what the current situation in Cambria is and what the current state of technology is in terms of water treatment, water delivery, water quality, water conservation, water efficiency. These are all terms that have very specific meanings, but they all mean managing water better. And if we don't know how well we're managing it right now, it doesn't do us very much good. If we don't know how much we have access to without harming the habitat, it doesn't really do us much good. The Coastal Commission keeps asking for the district to do in-stream flow studies to see how our pumping affects the stream flow and the habitat around it. A new inventory of buildable lots and an update to how many lots would still need to be purchased as we continue to pursue the build-out reduction program would be a useful thing to have. It might be a good idea to compare our actual water use to the projected water use from the water master plan, because that water master plan is based on how much water we use. If those projections are not in line with what's actually happening on the ground now, it might be a time to look at those numbers and revise them. We also could be doing water audits to make sure that people have the most efficient technologies. I'm not talking about conserving or having your grass grow brown. I'm talking about having the efficient technologies that basically you can't even really tell any difference in the quality of your life. It's not affected at all. It just is less water is used. My last point is I urge this board to consider the future of Cambria and what it will look like, because this is why this is important. Right now, somebody who owns a lot that's on the wait list has to root for desal, even if they don't think that it's a good idea for environmental reasons, for whatever reasons they don't like it. They have to root for it if they want to build, which means that the people that build eventually and move in here are not going to be the kind of environmentally sensitive type people that we would like to have here. Those kind of people are more likely to get rid of their lots when they hear there's no water. And that's not a community that I'd prefer to live in. Last quotation, and thank you for the couple of extra seconds, President McKinnon. Do not confuse motion and progress. A rocking horse keeps moving, but it does not make any progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Agenda review. Board, is there any additions or deletions?
President McKinnon?
Yeah.
With regard to the minutes that are going to be considered for approval, there is one typographical error on page 34 that needs to be corrected. It says change Commissioner Wong. It should say change Commissioners Wrong. And that's on page 34. Unanimous hearing on a rehearing in 2007 opposing Commissioner Wong, and it should read Wrong.
Wrong.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if this is appropriate for a change of the agenda, but I am going to ask that we don't waive full reading of the item number 8.
Does that mean you're going to read it?
Well, I will volunteer to read it.
Be careful what you wish for. Okay. General Manager, anything else?
I stand corrected. It's there's no commissioner's name. It just means commissioner, and it needs to not be Wong or Wrong.
Just blood, none. Commissioner suggests that. Okay.
And I thank Mahela Burton for bringing that to our attention, and I thank you for correcting me for being Wong.
Wong. You can be Wong once in a while. Okay. You're right on. Manager report.
Thank you, President McKinnon and board members. I'd like to start out with the district engineer, Bob Gresham, given the desalination update, and then if he would continue on as part of the manager's report to give his engineering.
For years I've witnessed the updates to North Coast Area Plan that happened probably 5 or more years ago, where it was the Coastal Commission that inserted conditions into Cambria as community-wide conditions, which then became part of the 2008 update to the North Coast Area Plan. And I mentioned the one that we were trying to abide by, which just to reiterate, it says use, where feasible, subsurface feedwater intakes, for example, beach wells, instead of open pipelines from the ocean, where they will not cause significant adverse impacts to either beach topography or potable groundwater supplies. And essentially, they put that condition into Cambria's community-wide conditions for us to investigate for desalination. And then in 2011, voted against allowing the data to be collected to see whether that was indeed feasible. So what we're going to do from here on out in the environmental clearance process, the Corps will be defining a wide range of alternatives. So it'll be going back to the 2004 study that Kennedy Jenks did, which had alternatives ranging from storage reservoirs through Nacimiento water, through whale rock exchange, and desal. So that's going to be part of that effort. For desalination, they'll most likely be looking at ways to avoid the Cambria State Marine Park, which was designated in 2010 to be offshore from Cambria. So they'll be developing different alternatives to look at ways to avoid that. Most likely there will be some alternatives that will include wire-wrapped screened intake approaches as opposed to subterranean intakes. That type of approach is being looked at by West Basin Water District with their Redondo Beach pilot study. So those are the type of alternatives that you'll be hearing more about as they get more involved with the environmental impact statement development. Part of that process is that they'll end up having a scoping session meeting, and you'll hear more about the issues they'll be looking at, and as well as just a very quick sketch of some of the potential alternatives that might be studied. That'll be a public, transparent process where it gets noticed The Corps has a requirement to publish in the Federal Register. So I believe their timeline on that is either late February or early March, and I haven't had time to pin that date down yet with them, but I know they're working on the noticing process right now. So that pretty much completes the discussion on the desal project. I'd be glad to stop here, or if, as Jerry suggested, I can move on to other projects that I'm working on. So what would be your preference at this point?
Board members?
Yeah.
Director Cliff?
When they say they're going to look at alternatives, are we basically still talking about the same alternatives that appeared in the Water Master Plan? And I guess what my question is, I was in meetings this morning that involved a concern in the South County area for seawater intrusion, like Los Osos has, and Pismo has got some potential problems and things like that. And I'm wondering if we're sitting there, those wells are all inland of the beach, that they're worried about seawater intrusion. And I'm wondering, have we ever investigated potential wells right along the ocean where seawater intrusion is? You know, we have a mound out there that keeps seawater intrusion out. Is it not one of the potential alternatives to drill this side of that mound? And if it's seawater intrusion in that area, you know, what's the difference between that seawater, brackish water, as compared to under the surf line?
Okay, let me go a step at a time here. As far as other alternatives in the EIS process, there will be other alternatives. I know on desal in particular, you'll see new alternatives coming out on that particular range of alternatives. You'll see pretty much a repeat of what was in the 2004 study by Kennedy Jenks and anything else that might get suggested between now and then. As far as the use of an inland well to draw seawater, typically you have a saltwater wedge that goes underneath the fresh water that flows out to sea, where you have an interface between a creek and the ocean. And in the operation of our particular well fields, we've been careful not to draw that saltwater wedge inward for fear of contaminating the fresh water. The mound, which is created by the treated wastewater effluent between its down gradient from the potable wells, we're open to looking at other alternatives,
right,
obviously.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I guess I don't want just a rehash of the exact same report again. I'd like to see them be a little more creative in looking at alternatives, and from a simple country boy approach, you know, sticking a straw between where seawater intrusion is now and where seawater exists doesn't seem to me to be drawing seawater in. It seems to be sucking up part that's already coming in. But I don't know. See, I'm not the engineer on those things. I just have to try to think about logic. In other words, like we own the property out there at Lone Pine. Right.
I'm sorry.
Which property? We own that property, San Simeon property, that's not in the creek bed, but up on the
flag lot north
of
the lot. Yes. Uh-huh.
And I'm saying, has anybody ever investigated just simply drilling straight down from there?
And yes.
We're going to hit brackish water.
Yeah.
But so what? What's the difference between brackish water and seawater?
I have pressed the current geophysicist working for the Army Corps consultant on that very point, whether that flag lot could be reused somehow with that in mind.
I don't mean using it for drilling and going all kinds of other directions, but I mean just...
No, I've pushed him specifically on what you're suggesting, and he didn't feel that the formation was that good for that purpose. It has some claystone down there and then impermeable materials. So he's looked at the soil borings that was done back in the 90s when they were looking at alternatives out there and didn't feel that positive about it. But I could certainly, you know, reapproach him in view of what's happened on the 9th of December and say, hey, are you absolutely certain that we can't, you know, think outside the box somehow and come up with something there? But it didn't look good back in, when I had those discussions about a year or so ago.
I'd like to weigh in on that, too, if you don't mind. I definitely support the other director's position. And, you know, we're spending so much money going through environmental impacts to, it probably doesn't cost a heck of a lot to drill a hole, maybe, what, $10 a foot for, you know, for a few, maybe $10,000, we can get, maybe find an answer that's feasible. Certainly the mouth of the creek isn't going to be feasible, but that might be feasible. So I'm looking for that, and I agree with Mr. Cliff, is that if we drill down, we don't have to necessarily get this partially brackish water that's somehow protecting the from the intrusion. Let's continue on down and get the seawater, but just go straight down. It won't interrupt with the stream. We're going to get seawater somehow. We might as well get it when it's before it intrudes, and get the water and start processing it. It's an idea. I think all ideas should be thrown out, especially with new technologies with desal.
Okay. Director Robinette.
Thank you, and I would agree too with the other directors. My question is, with the person you mentioned from the Army Corps, and looking at the studies from the 90s, and basing the decision on that, it's a question to you as the engineer. Do those conditions change over time?
No, if they're geological in nature, they're pretty much fixed. What can change is the technology and how you construct a well, and that's improved over the years. But as far as the conditions subterranean there, they're pretty fixed.
So it could be still revisited, and with technology you have or we have available today, we could still then get the information we're looking for.
Yes, we can look at it. I mean, what typically occurs in this area is you have this Franciscan deposit, which is pretty non-permeable. The permeable deposits are typically along the creek channels. So we're limited as far as where you have a good depth of permeable materials. That flag lot is outside of that area. But, you know, again, we have pretty good soil boring data on that. I can double check, triple check, you know, whether there's some way we can look at that, but certainly consider your questions.
Would then when you got this conversation with the Army Corps, and I was only wondering if actually conditions do change, and you're thinking not necessarily, but technology is better. Have you pursued that with the consultant from the Army Corps to pursue it anyway?
To investigate it,
mm-hmm.
We were considering that as a possible alternative early on, but after we saw the soil boring data and talked to the geophysicists about it, it waned interest. We can environmental factors that are going to be front and center in their research and addressing those concerns. And it's a legal question in my mind. Is I don't know the answer at this meeting, but I can find out and come back. But you know, do you have to absolutely define every single alternative at a scoping session? I tend to believe you don't have to be locked into just whatever you mentioned in a scoping session. I think there's a little more flexibility as the environmental clearance process proceeds. But I'll recheck on that. I think the key point they want to do is write a notice of intent that'll get published, and exactly how specific that has to be, I need to get back to you on. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I'm totally confused now, so that's good. Do we ever have a session where we don't talk desal? I guess not. It's always right there, that big elephant. Are you saying that in February or March we're going to have this dialogue with the Army Corps of Engineers that looks at the different, whether it be Kennedy Jenks and any other, as suggested by Director Clift and Barringer, is that what they're going to do? come back to us with the alternate?
Not that broad of a discussion. What the scoping session is going to be specific to what the National Environmental Policy Act requires, or NEPA, which is the federal version of our CEQA.
Yeah.
And they're abiding by that particular act in conducting the scoping session. Now, what we could do in the interim is have a more open workshop discussion, if we wanted to, on, you know, the alternatives of 2004 and the reasons and so forth, and have more of a back and forth exchange. But that would, in my mind, would go well above and beyond what a scoping session is in terms of meeting the requirements of NEPA. So we could try to crystallize this better maybe in a future staff report if that's helpful to you. But I see a workshop on alternatives being separate and apart from a scoping session with the intent of meeting the requirements of NEPA. I think that's going to be narrower in scope and a little more specific to that particular regulation than a workshop would be.
Director Cliff.
In your presentation, you twice talked about if the recycling of the mound might not present enough supply, and the drilling might not have enough supply. It seems to me this board has got to make a decision on what the amount of supply is, because if you're looking at the supply that's suggested in of 600 acre feet, you're limiting to the major type of project that you have to have, and that 600 acre feet. So I think this board ought to make some policy decisions about the supply number, and so I'm either now or later on I'm going to ask that that we revisit the decision about 18 units as being a for our next board meeting, and let's sit down and discuss what is a reasonable supply amount, and then I think your project can be talked about, and maybe one of the alternatives that hasn't been considered because it didn't produce enough to meet the supply that has been talked about before may be become an alternative. And so it seems to me that we need to say X number, and we're in this thing right now about how many gallons per person per day we should be using. So the numbers get really simple math to me. Is you take the number of gallons per person per day times the number of persons we're talking about having here, which is basically 1.6 times 4,650. And you know what your supply needs are, and you subtract what the natural flow is, and you say we've got a deficit of X number of acre feet. And then plan for that. And if that deficit is 100 acre feet, then we don't need to build a Taj Mahal for 100 acre feet. But until we make that decision and make that policy of this board, we're going to be off wandering around.
Mr. Cliff's recommendation, I don't think we've had a chance. You know, I can't talk to anybody outside this room, it seems, due to the Brown Act. And I would love to have an open discussion as to what our collective minds are thinking. I don't entirely agree that we should just try and figure out an amount that balances a little bit of growth. I think that we need a contingency that anticipates the lack of stream flow. I mean, we're trying to plan this not for growth, we're trying to plan it for an emergency. The nation has like 14% of the snow cover. We need to plan for survival 10 years from now, and we can't totally rely on the creeks, but I'd like to be able to express that and be able to have that as some kind of an agenda item if possible.
You are discussing it right now.
It's the desal report.
And we do have to have, I think, 95 to 2012, and we're still spinning those wheels. And we do have to bring, I think, the alternate water supply to a head. And I think we do need to look at the parameters of 2012 versus 2004, and perhaps policy should change so that it opens up more alternatives than we have when you say 600 acre feet. In theory right now, to do 665 more water meters, it only requires 100 to 150 acre feet. Additional to what we have right now if we're using 11 units a billing period. So there's a lot of information we have today that perhaps we should reconstruct a policy that makes more sense. And the final question I have to you before we can do something else besides desal today, what in the purview of ACE can they do for us? In other words, they have funds that they are using on a daily basis, and are they able to look at these alternatives, or do they have to stay within, again, the purview of desalinization, the project desalinization?
Well, my understanding is for them to comply with NEPA, they have to look at a broad range of alternatives, which goes beyond desalination.
Okay.
Now, once they complete that review, and if they find that another alternative is recommended besides desalination, then the likely step would involve an amendment to the project cooperation agreement that we have in place with them, because that is fairly specific to a desalination project. But then you'd have to go through an amendment process on that agreement, have it rewritten around whatever the recommended alternative would be at that point. That could be, a fairly lengthy time process. We did one project amendment, which took, a couple of years to get through the process. So, but that's always a possibility that with the assistance of, Washington, D.C. and our representatives there, you write an amendment to that PCA and then go from there. So.
Thank you.
Now, at this point, do you want me to talk about other projects I'm working on, Jerry? Did I understand that correctly?
You're still on.
Okay.
That'd be great, Bob. Thanks.
Let me find my place and just give me a minute here.
Before you start, Paul Carlson, did you want to discuss desal, or are you satisfied with what you've heard so far?
I'm satisfied.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. This is in the amendment to the general manager's report on page 12, I think. So I'll just go through this list fairly quickly. The first set of projects, Stewart Street Tank number 3 and Rodeo Grounds Pump Station projects. We passed the legal challenge period on the earlier environmental clearance process for each project. So now that that's passed, we'll start working on the coastal development permit applications. We're taking this a step at a time in case there is appeal. We don't want to spend a great deal of budget on the design that RBF has. So we'll next work on any supporting design for that coastal development permitting process and get that started with the county. Of course, CDPs are appealable to the Coastal Commission, so if you get an appeal, it's at least a one-year process to probably make it through the appeal process. So, and then things can change in that process. So we're going to do just the minimum necessary to support each project's coastal development permit, get that turned into county, and go from there. So that's the next step on those projects. The 2010 Urban Water Management Tuesday evening sometime. So if they're not substantial, we'll probably knock it out within a day. So that's the gist of where we're at. We're still trying to target the February 23rd board meeting on that with all the public notices and so forth that go along with that. Updates to the water conservation retrofit program. Again, we're We're meeting internally as staff. We're looking very closely at the 2010 California Green Building Standards Code, which went into effect July 1st of 2011. There's a lot of positives coming out of that process that I think that'll benefit our conservation program. So that work is continuing. There may be some updates to the CCSD municipal code that come out of that, in which case we would go through an ordinance type process with you, and you know, with legal review and so forth. Then capital project budget planning assistance. Again, we're updating our database on future capital projects so we can do some financial planning from that, and that involves meeting mainly with our water and wastewater superintendents, you know, Jim Adams and Mike Finnegan, so and Jerry, of course. So, and that pretty much summarizes the other projects that we have going on right now. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We have one request to speak, Jim Webb on 6A.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Webb. I live here in Cambria. I just wanted to comment on the district engineer's summary regarding the desalination project, which was agenda item 6A. In it, he makes the following point, that part of the resistance on the part of the Coastal Commission to the proposed geotechnical investigation was stemmed from a confusion over data collection locations not necessarily coinciding with where future alternatives would locate subterranean wells. And it caught my attention because it didn't appear to me that they were confused. And so I started to think about what did occur and whether they were in fact confused. And I have a friend who had a stroke. And sometimes when we go into a bar and he orders a drink, they refuse to serve him because they think he's drunk. And they're confused. He's not drunk. He's impaired. Okay? That's different than saying, for example, I might ask you, how old do you think I am? And some of you might guess, and some of you might be right, most of you probably be wrong, but you're not confused about it. You just don't know. You were never told how old I am. I've never announced it. I don't wear a badge that says I'm X age or so on. So you're not confused about it. And it strikes me that that comparison is similar to what happened in part with the Coastal Commission. They were not confused over data collection locations not necessarily coinciding with future alternatives where they would locate subterranean wells. They were never told where those subterranean wells would be located. They were never shown, well, we're going to do the investigation here, but the wells are going to be somewhere else. That was never presented. In fact, details of the entire project were never presented. And that was done because this was a project within a program EIR, tiered under that, or to some of us appeared to be a piecemealed project. So I disagree with the characterization that the staff at the commission was confused over this. I believe they just simply were not informed. And to this day, I would look forward to any of you explaining to the community, myself, or have the engineer do it, precisely where those subterranean wells were, in fact, going to be located. Thank you.
Thank you. General Manager, back to 6B.
Board President and board members, thank you very much. As part of my general manager's report, may I suggest that we might want to consider at some point in time having a water supply issues and alternatives, kind of a workshop before ACE gets too far down the process direction, and we can move forward on that.
Yes.
Thank you very much. On page 7, and I won't go into a whole lot of detail on my particular items because I'm going to be giving the board an update on the progress we've made on some of these goals and goals that were adopted in 2011. But at the top of page 7 is support the goals adopted by the board. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we go over that particular staff report. The second item is the infrastructure issues that Bob talked on. I think there's going to be some additional discussion about that later on in the day. The master fee schedule, we have the final draft in hand, and we have our final meeting with Bartle Wells scheduled to finish that, and then we'll convene the ad hoc committee. Once the ad hoc committee meets, we'll want to have a public workshop to solicit input from the community regarding the changes to the master fee schedule. As a point of clarification, this is not relating to water rates or sewer rates. It's about internal costs that we charge for services rendered by the district, such as going out after hours and turning off somebody's water or turning their water on and things like that. And it's been a lot of years since it's been visited. So the item on page 8, the special the application agreement, projects application agreement, that's an agenda item. We'll discuss that also. The SCADA item will be under my goals and objectives. And just continuing on the rest of page 8 are some of the things that I'm working on, and we'll probably discuss most of these during the goals and objectives and future goals. On page 9 is the financial manager's report. For the month of December, there was no disbursements over $100,000. As you can see in our general fund, we have $3,936,309. One of the things that the finance director and myself will be bringing to the board as part of next year's budget process is that we have a reserve fund policy that kind of lays out how we want to allocate those and how we want to commit those funds. That's strictly up to the board from a board policy, but I think a recommendation would be to really allocate how you want those things that amount of money funded. There was a suggestion made, and I think it's a good suggestion, and I'll work with the finance manager in working on a pie chart to simplify some of these numbers for you. I think that was a really good idea. We could probably do that in an Access or an Excel format. So you'll have a pie chart showing, you know, what our net worth is in the different areas and things like that. So,
can I ask a question?
Certainly. Go.
Under the funds where you have the LEAF funds broken out, the Proposition 1A, what exposure do we have to that anymore, and should we move that into general funds or?
I'll answer it, then I'll let Al answer it if I don't answer it correctly. I think the probability of those being rated is diminishing. Is that a safe statement? I mean, at the city level, we had some real concerns about it being taken, and I think that's not so much the case anymore. If I'm wrong, Alan, please correct me.
It has been a while since I read everything on this when they actually took the money the first time a couple of years ago, but best recollection, they can't take any more funds without repaying what they already have.
Yeah, and it was a three-year situation, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just thinking we're coming up on that 3 years, and I wondered, is this point in time where we really don't have any exposure?
I don't want to say there's absolutely no chance of exposure, but I would agree that it's pretty limited at this point. Non-existent, but close to that point, yes.
I may be thinking that just in our budget planning for next year that might be something we want to look at.
I think that's a good idea, and we could incorporate that into that draft of that reserve policy that we'd be bringing forward to the board on. For an example, a reserve policy would be designating 3 months operating capital to keep the doors open, if you will, in case something catastrophically happened and we didn't have any revenue coming in. You know, hope that never happens, but it's something that we need to at least designate some reserves for. And Alan and I have had some really good conversations on that. I'll just continue on through the report. Again, Bob's touched on page 12 on his report. The page 13 is the water supervisor's report. The water wells are down, but they're not down to a point where we need to be alarmed at this point. We are continuing to monitor them, and in this report that was in your board packet, this is the most recent up-to-date one. Just some brief comments on the SSO that occurred. Those issues have been addressed. There's been equipment replaced, and we're continuing to replace some of the equipment that attributed and getting estimates for some of that equipment that resulted in that incident. And then this is part of the CIP that we're working on coming up with a list of things that continue to need to be replaced. Page 19 is the facility and resources supervisor's report. One thing, just really quick, the Berry Trail, the California Conservation Corps donated 2 days of work to the district. If you haven't had a chance to go up to the Berry Trail and see the work that CCC has done up there with the drainage and the trail, they did a really, really good job. We are meeting with the California Conservation Corps tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock for the pre-construction meeting for the Moonstone Connector Trail project. And Carlos has done a great job. We're moving forward on hoping to get that thing completed. And a special thanks to Director Robinette. She's worked for the last 4 or 5 years on that project. So I think keep our fingers crossed that'll be done pretty soon. And then again, we had 46 events in the Vets Hall this last month. The administrative officer's report, Monique Madrid, she touches on recruitments, conservation, voluntary lot merger, the master fee schedule, special projects application, and the wait list. And then the fire chief's report, I don't see a mark here, so just really quickly a couple key things on this, his fire report. The Cambria Community District's Fire Department is actively participating in a grant-funded national research project to determine the effectiveness of compressed air foam systems, which is called CAFs, in a setting of interior structure firefighting. During the months of December, fire department staff attended a research workshop in Rockville, Maryland, with a group of fire and research personnel from around the country in an effort to determine the Valen research model. They're also working with Cal Poly on this, so kudos to the fire department. Mark's the only one that went. The staff report sounds a little misleading, like everybody from the fire department went to Maryland. But that wasn't the case, and it was funded entirely by the grant that we received. As you can see, in the month of December, there was a total of 74 fire calls, 38 medical, 11 hazardous situations, 10 public service assist, 13 false alarms, for a total of 74 calls. Now, that concludes my manager's report at this time. If there's any questions that I can answer for the board, I know it's a lot of information, and I know everybody's read it all, so I don't need to go over it in too much detail, but I'll be more than happy to answer any questions at this time.
I have one question. Eucalyptus project, wasn't that going to be a phased project? And if so, is phase one complete or multiple phases complete at this point?
Phase one is complete. Carlos, do you want to comment on phase two and the funding for that? Phase one's logs, the logs that were removed from that project are slated for the erosion project on the Fiscalini Ranch. The linear board feet of product that was removed from phase one eucalyptus project was insufficient to complete the erosion control project on the Fiscalini Ranch. So I'll turn it over to Carlos for the phase two question.
So you're correct. It's two phases. The first phase is already completed, and that's half of the work site. The first phase is still about 4 years, where we're going to monitor how that site rehabs, how well the native plants take, and after the 5 years, and we'll look at doing the second phase of that.
Excellent. Thank you. Directors?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. President. With respect to the skate park, I've noticed the activity taking place out there in terms of the repairs. Question I have is, have we identified a group or a person that will take the lead in the upkeep of that, or are we going to be still having to handle that aspect of it? And then beyond that, what is the extent of our liability if, in fact, someone gets injured there? Do we have, are we held harmless for the people using that facility?
The torch was handed off to another individual to assume responsibility of doing the construction of the skate park. I think that the person that was in charge of it for several years just wanted to not really be involved in it anymore. So,
liability is fairly minimal, assuming that that form holds up.
So we should then, in fact, make sure that anyone that uses the park has filled out that form and is waiving liability. Is that correct?
That's really a critical element in utilizing a facility that has inherent dangers. Assuming the agreement has been signed appropriately and properly, we have a fairly minimum amount of liability.
And I would also think that that monitoring the use of the park then becomes something that we would be required to follow up on, because obviously there are times in the evenings and on the weekend when folks just wander out there and use it. And so how do we deal with that?
Well, that certainly is the most critical element, is that it's properly supervised in addition to having the appropriate agreements in place. And I have no firsthand knowledge of how that works, but I'm sure the manager can probably lend some facts to that.
Mr. President, can I?
Certainly.
Doug. You might want to look into that. My son-in-law happened to have been on a commission that had a state law passed that said that it is a hazardous sport, and it's the occupant's responsibility, just like a ski slope. And I believe as part of that ordinance, you cannot lock it. You cannot keep people from going there. It's just something you can look into. I'll check on my side, but I'd also like to coordinate with you, too.
Director Cliff?
I think you'll find your insurance company will also tell you don't lock it and don't have on-site supervision, because then you assume certain obligations that are different from the waiver, general waiver that exists now for people using it at their own risk. It's a unique and kind of a different thought process than most people think about. But once you accept total control of it and totally monitor it and everything, then you're there and you're supposed to keep control and everything. Whereas almost every skateboard park is unmonitored. I think Los Osos is that way, and so is most of them that are out there, simply because the insurance company doesn't want you to do that, because now you're accepting certain liabilities that you're not accepting under this general responsibility for your own behavior.
If I can just respond briefly, it's kind of a balance. You have to balance the insurance risks and the directives of your insurance company against the practical operation of the park. And every park is operated uniquely and differently, and I don't frankly know the structure of how this is operated, but certainly we can report back with some detail.
Yeah, you don't lose the negligence for having a dangerous situation. I mean, you still have to keep it up. You have to keep the park up, but what you're talking about is not monitoring the individual activities of the individuals. But you still have to have you can't put a park out there that's, got a chain across the thing in the middle of the night so they run into it. I mean, you have to be careful in your, in not creating a liable situation, but the actual usage of having someone stand there and say, you have to have knee pads on, you have to have this on, that's where you get into some problems.
And we'll have an answer for Director Thompson and the board. I'll have the facilities resource manager and myself and district council will look into it and have a solid answer for you and a recommendation with regard to how we should proceed or not proceed with that facility.
Director Robinette.
Thank you. Just for my information, but I'd appreciate it. Who owns that property?
We do.
I believe we do, but there, you know, there is an agreement before I arrived that there were specific guidelines regarding that, and I'll find out, but I believe we own the property.
Okay, because I just think, since we're having the discussion, that it would, you know, be rather timely to find out, make sure, who does own it, and then who built it, who built the structures. And do we have it posted then as a CSD, use at your own risk kind of posting? That's all.
Very good. I had the question just at the outset that how did this become our responsibility? And it seems like it's been serendipity that some folks initially wanted, and rightly so, a skate park. But I'm concerned more of the wooden structure that is barricaded somewhat now, that it looks like it's ready to fall apart. And from that,
I'm stalled for 20 years focusing on this one desal project, which is failing. I'm afraid the district engineer may have to be reprogrammed, however, but we'll, you know, hopefully see if he can start to change some of the way he writes his reports. I was confused on these agenda items, so I probably should have spoken on 6A, but because his desalination report kind of ran into what I thought was 6B, the manager's report. But I guess for the future, if the agenda could be a little clearer, he was talked about desalination, then he went into Stewart Street tanks, rodeo grounds, and the urban water management plan, all under desalination. So I actually probably should have spoken on 6A. My comment is about the urban water management plan. As you know, I've been waiting for it for over a year, and now finding out it's going to be delayed at least one more week, and that we may not have the 30-day window to comment. And we need absolutely more than 30 days to comment after waiting for one whole year on that plan. So I hope that the public comment period is not now shortened to some really short period of time, so that we have to read through those, you know, 500 pages or whatever it is, and try to get our act together at the last minute. Master fees for services of the district, I'm really glad to hear that that's like more internal fees. A lot of people I know were asking me what that means, and as you know, I mean, I come up here and speak. Other people are actually asking me questions that I'm asking for them and trying to relay information. So people were wondering if that was rate increases. So I'm glad to hear that it's not. When we're talking about CIPs, it's come to my attention just in the last couple of weeks that the actual numbers that are being projected for desalination are coming from a capital improvement or a capital cost from your EIR from 1994. And there has actually never been a new project for desalination that has been capital costed out for you at today's dollars, or even $2,005 dollars, or $2,009 or $2,010. So the $17 million for a desal without solar and the $25 million for desal with solar is completely bogus. Those numbers are completely wrong. My hair just went on fire. It's like I don't understand budget stuff very much to begin with, but when I heard that just is unbelievable. So those prices are completely out of whack. The other thing is, and the cost per acre foot was $1,233 based on what Director Sanders answered someone's question. He answered that question that was the marginal cost of desalination, and that's absolutely not true, because the capital improvement that capital cost alone would be $1,233 an acre feet, not including operating and maintenance. So operations and maintenance would be at least another $1,200, $1,500 on top of that. You're talking $3,000 an acre foot for desalination, which is something I had said before, but I'd never had anyone actually explain that to me. So I wanted to just put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Moving on. Consent agenda. Any changes? Anything you want to pull from the consent agenda? I'm hearing no response, so we move on to...
I move that we approve this consent agenda.
All right.
Second.
No discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Now 8A. Consider introduction.
Uh-oh.
Jerry McKinnon.
I put in a request to speak on 7.
And you remembered, right?
Don't go away now. Listen. May I speak?
My apologies, Mr. McKinnon. 7A. All right.
Well, I'm not a four-leaf clover that you look over, but at any rate, here I am. My name is Jerry McKinnon, and you know my specific interest is in the Veterans Memorial Building. And at the present time, the Veterans Memorial Building is in the budget page called Facilities and Resources. So the only way I can capture what's going on for the benefit of the Veterans Memorial Building is by looking in the items under Facilities and Resources. And my arithmetic indicated that in the month of December, $9,112.35 were spent in that Department of Facilities and Resources. And then when I go through it and pull out those things that refer to, which is the only way I can identify, I don't know whether there are other buildings included other than the public restrooms, but in the buildings and grounds, $537.51 was spent, or 6% of that $9,112.35. Gentlemen and ladies, I'm waiting patiently to see a report on the progress in replacing the wood rot that is in this building. If you look at the handrail that goes down this ramp, you recognize that it's possibly a dangerous situation, the way it's fixed or the way it's kind of hanging there. So I would suggest to you that my concern on this building is not being met by the way I see the money spent on facilities and resources. But I'm just one. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd just like to point out and thank Mr. McKinnon and some of the other Legion members for rolling up their sleeves and painting the entrance to the club in the back there and doing some much-needed repairs to that part of the building. Very appreciated.
Good. Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President McKinnon. I know you've already approved the consent agenda. I just wanted to raise a concern that I had. The fuel bill is back up to around $13,000 this month, and it fluctuates. I mean, you look at the month-to-month comparison, and it goes down as low as $4,000, but it's really unclear why that might be happening, and I think that it's something that maybe the board would maybe want to, or at least the general manager would maybe want to put some attention to. There's only one. When I went back over the last couple of years of expenditure reports, there's only one time when the amount of the diesel or gasoline is actually noted. And sometimes the water department uses hardly any gasoline, and sometimes they use a lot. The wastewater uses a lot of diesel, and they're pretty consistent. So I'm just... The difference between last year and this year in December 10, we spent $7,500, and December 11, it was $13,000. In November 10, it was $3,300. November 11 was $10,800 almost. So maybe this is something that could use some attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Comment?
I don't know the exact percentage off the top of my head, but the vast majority of fuel that we purchase is ended up resold through the joint agreements we have with the healthcare district. They use our pumps and reimburse us in the school district. Wastewater actually uses maybe, again, this is a guess, but I'd say 2 to 5% of the diesel that they purchase, they actually use. If you look at the expenditure reports, you know, we don't spend near what net of what we actually purchase. As far as the timing of payments, as I mentioned in last month's report, finance manager's report, because of a person who processed the majority of our accounts payable, went out on an injury last November, and we did get slowed down in paying our bills, so that's the problem with looking at 1 month compared to another a year later. There may be, we generally get fuel every 2 weeks, so generally there'll be two sets of invoices paid every month. It's not always that way. Some months are maybe one, some maybe three, so you have to take that into account. Fuel costs have gone up because the cost of fuel has gone up, but it's not gone up much more, if any, than the actual cost of fuel that has gone up. We're not using any more significant amounts, at least. I don't look at the exact gallons, but in general, it's roughly the same usage.
Good. Thank you. Moving on then to agenda item number 8A, consider introduction of ordinance 1-2012, amending section 5.04.390 of the CCSD code relating to maintenance of building sewers and lateral sewers. General Manager.
Thank you, Board President and Board Members. Staff report 8A, let me little background about this, and then I'll go ahead and read the recommendation and talk a little bit about the item. We've made several repairs within the system. Our current ordinance is silent on the language regarding who's responsible within the laterals from a business or a residence out to the main line. Because of that, there are instances where who's responsible for what portion of the lateral as it relates to tying into the line. So again, I think that based on the problems that we've ran into, these changes would be in the best interest of the district. Let me just read the recommendation real quick, if you don't mind. It is recommended the board introduce by title only ordinance 01-2012, amending section 5.04.390 of the Cambria Community Services District Code relating to the maintenance of buildings, sewers, and lateral sewers, and waive further reading. With that, I'll be more than happy to answer any questions. I know during the course of the week I've had a couple board members ask me about some of the language which in the change of the ordinance, and at that time, well, this time myself or the district council will be more than happy to answer those for you.
Director Barringer.
Yes, the reason I wanted to make, maybe we don't have to, we can waive reading of this, but, and I'd be glad to read it if it comes to that. But there's several sections in here that I have a problem with, and I'd like to make the adjustments now so we don't extend the issue if the other board members agree to it. But also, a lot of people that are working right now, a lot of the contractors, what we have left, are working, and they will miss this entirely, and even many of our citizens will miss the fact that we're putting an ordinance in place a month from now without them realizing the extent of the issue. I do agree with the purpose and intent of the ordinance. I think that it's well deserved, but I think that we're putting in words that say, and let me paraphrase on page 46, that if the property owner shall inspect and provide the district a report of the results of the inspection of the lateral sewer on their property using closed circuit television inspection and other inspection method when a building or structure with an existing lateral or otherwise proposing to connect a previously unconnected structure to an existing ladder, and if they know that the sewer ladder is over 10 years old. I think that's new language. And I tend to think that we are telling the realtors in town, the contractors in town, that there's an issue, that they're going to have to address. And I wanted to make sure that the people that are at home and weren't able to attend today realize that this language, they might want to look at that and have an opportunity to comment on. If we go down on page 46, item E, the general manager shall determine the extent of repair required, and such repair, short of complete replacement of the lateral, may be authorized at the sole discretion of the general manager. The following requirements for a lateral repair or replacement shall be met, blah, blah, blah. As far as an amendment, I would propose the fact that all applicants would have an appeal to the board. I trust the general manager, and I think for efficiency's sake, that's what it should be. It should be a final decision. And most general manager's decisions are rubber stamped, but are deemed to be quite significant. But for that applicant that has a problem with it, I tend to think that there should always be an appeal process to a general manager's decision. And if we take a look at the last page, and this is one that that Mr. Carmel might have an issue with. In item F, it says unlawful for any person or entity to act in a manner inconsistent with the provisions set forth herein. Any person or entity found to be in violation of this ordinance shall be guilty of a misdemeanor pursuant to section 1.12.01. So far, emphasis is going to be added here. And every day such person or entity is in violation shall constitute a new and separate offense pursuant to the code. I don't want to be a signatory to that. That's all I'm saying. Otherwise, I've read the rest, and it's appropriate. So I would move. Perhaps there's a motion in place? Discussion.
I'd be glad to answer any questions. The language you read is stock language that's virtually in every single ordinance that deals with your equipment and facilities that you've passed previously, and it's virtually in every code you'll see in the state of California.
I would like to start a precedent other than that, and I haven't approved any ordinance that had that in there. Maybe previous boards have. Maybe everybody does. I don't think we have to. And what's the what? Help me understand the benefit of having each day a violation each day constituting a new and separate offense, where the previous paragraph says criminal penalties imposed shall be held civilly liable.
About 2 years ago, it's not at all unusual, and I certainly respect everything you've said. And if you'd like to make changes to it, have at it.
Director Robinette.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions on what prompted this current practice. Right now, if there's problems with the lateral or the other line that goes to the building that goes to the house, who's responsible for paying for the repairs this moment?
Well, Jerry can answer it. The code is silent. It's truly silent on the issue of liability and maintenance responsibility. There is no provision dealing with it. So it's kind of up in the air. Conventionally, this is how sewers work. This is an idiot's version because I am truthfully an idiot when it comes to engineering issues. You have a building sewer, and that extends from the building to essentially the property line. And then you have the lateral mm-hmm. that's in the easement that connects your building sewer to your sewer main. You own the sewer main in the street. Everything on the property owner's side, including the easement side of the lateral, is private property. It's their responsibility. But that's not specified in our code, which is pretty unusual. And that hole has to be filled, whether it's with this language or with language that's watered down. In my mind, doesn't really matter that much. I've just written it with a lot of teeth because that's typically how we write these things.
Okay. But actually, I'm still not sure right now. Right now, a building line or a lateral line, because I do understand all that. There are still a couple of questions. In the past, I'm not sure who put them in, if the CSD ever did, or if it's always been the builder of the property or the owner of the property puts it in. But when they're breaking at this point, I still don't quite understand who's paying for building and lateral repairs right now.
Well, maybe Jerry can answer that. I know the property owner is responsible for installing it, but I know that Jerry just referred to a $4,000 bill that apparently we've paid in conjunction with a lateral. So I don't know the answer to that question.
And there's been two instances that we've paid for them so far, and we're starting to see. We're starting to see this happen on a more regular basis, and the reason being is they're older, tree roots gravitate towards water, things like that. Also, people have a tendency to extend their yards beyond where they're supposed to extend their yards, and that's just human nature. You know, the district council, Carmel, referred to the easement line, if you will, or the end of the property line. That's really very difficult in most cases in Cambria to determine where someone's property line ends and where our responsibility starts. And what you'll see in a lot of cases is that people have extended their yards all the way out to the end of the asphalt, and really it's not their property line. But because they've extended their yard out to the end of the asphalt and they've planted vegetation, that vegetation is causing damage to these, quote, laterals that we're talking about. And there's where we're really seeing the problems. When CCSD responds to a sewer complaint, it's very difficult because the language is silent whose responsibility is it to make those repairs. And it's been common practice, even before I came, to go ahead and assume responsibility and assume liabilities for those repairs. Those repairs are quite costly. This ordinance does not necessarily mean that we're going to throw up our hands and walk away and say you guys are responsible for it, but it is going to allow the district to be protected a little bit more. And as I indicated earlier, within the last couple of months, we've paid for about $8,000 of these things, and that's really what prompted this. It was as Tim said, shifting some of the financial responsibility away from the district. To the property owners that in both of the cases that we've seen, it's been their responsibility, but we went ahead and took care of it.
Okay, because to me that does open up a lot of interesting things to think about, because if somehow the CSD, at least at times, has been paying for a private owner's repairs, that is kind of a red flag to me, because I have never heard of a municipality coming onto your private property where it's, you know, it was your responsibility, your builder's responsibility to put the building line and to go out to the county's setback right-of-way with the lateral line, and then I guess then the CSD has their sewer line and then a connection out there just at where the lateral ends. So it does seem like we want to talk further on this one about, you know, first of all, agreeing that it to me anyway, at first thought here, I had no idea the property owner was not responsible for anything on their property that CSD might have been helping with. Then the next thing is, again, and I agree with you, Director, from the sewer here, to make sure that if repairs are made, they are made according to code, so that we don't have these spills or these leakages, you know, that create a real problem.
Can I add another comment? Mr. Carmel made me even more nervous because it's clear that a lateral really goes right to the main, so it's even within the easement, it sounds like. In other words, my property might stop, and I have another 40 feet before it gets to the sewer. That's considered the lateral, is it not?
That's 15, I think.
No, the lateral is just it can be 40 feet. Typically, it's much shorter. But you're right. I wanted to clarify. It's in the easement. It's in the right-of-way. In order for the property owner to install it, they need an encroachment permit from the county or from Caltrans.
Right. So now that that's installed, if I may have to fix that, I'm actually going to be having to get an easement authority. It says right here that the owner will have to go and get an encroachment easement in order to repair that. And it's really on public property. So the lateral doesn't end at my property line. The lateral ends when I'm connecting to the sewer. Is that correct?
The lateral ends when you connect to the main sewer.
Right.
That's correct.
Right. So when I do I have a house that's less than a lateral that's more than 10 years old. I purchase a house. Not only are the real estate agents and the new owners going to be liable to make sure that they've inspected that, but even after an inspection, if it fails, they may have to not only repair their lateral portion of the lateral. They have to repair the lateral all the way to and get an encroachment easement to where it was connected to the sewer.
Well, just to clarify, the lateral goes all the way until you hit the main. That's all
right.
Private. Every home is required to have a separate lateral and a separate building sewer and to maintain those. But you're right. There is some confusion, and they are required to get an encroachment permit because we don't own that right-of-way.
Right.
It's a public easement. The county or Caltrans owns it, and they're the ones that ultimately, or the property owner owns it, they're the ones that ultimately have to issue that permit. I did want to clarify one thing. The language that's in F, the enforcement provisions, it's identical to your general enforcement provision. It's literally word for word identical to your general enforcement provision, which is true for a violation of any provision in your code. It's the same language identically. So effectively taking it out of here won't do anything. You'd have to take it out of your general provision in order to actually make it have meaning, or you'd have to specify that it's not a misdemeanor, it's an infraction, or have substitute language. But I did want to clarify that.
I stand corrected. I still don't like it.
Director Cliff.
If I was building a new home and I wanted to connect into the sewer, do I only have to pay for the line out to my property line, or do I have to pay for the line all the way to the sewer?
You have to pay for the line, including the lateral, all the way to the connection to the main. Under our code, that is specific, as
right.
You have to get a licensed plumber
so,
to do that.
And I guess what I'm saying here is we should say this is still your property. Even though it went through an easement,
yep.
It's still your property. It's
the lateral.
Well, but not only that, it is unique to your property. It's only serving you. It's not the public's. That part there is not the public's.
You don't own the easement. You just own the lateral.
We go a lot of times across the easements.
Yeah.
But we have all kinds of lines and easements but we still own the line all the way out.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of things, general thing. And I didn't look at the code as it exists right now, but just for purposes in the future, I like lined out. What was existing, what's lined out, what's added. And I know that means colored ink and things like that. But
just to clarify, there's nothing in our code right now. Zero.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask the question. Was this actually a deal? Now, I do not wish to be a hearing officer on every person who wants to question the general manager's authority on something. And I don't want to set that precedent because we would end up becoming the hearing officer on every issue in which the general manager has authority. We set the policy. We give him that authority. If I had a problem and I didn't like it, I would simply appeal it to the board, and that means I don't have to do anything for a month or two. There's a point in time where you have to give that responsibility to someone. If you want to have someone in between that's a arbitrator or something like that and let the person pay the cost of arbitration or something, that's fine. But I'm not interested in us holding hearings every... You haven't been here when the water bill went crazy and you have hearing after hearing after hearing about water bills, and then you turn them all down anyhow. So please don't. I understand what we're talking about, but if you're going to do it, make some other kind of thing.
Right.
I may sympathize with that, Mr. President. I'd like to be able to make a motion after we hear from the public.
One more.
Director
Thompson.
Just one comment. I think the bottom line for me is that by virtue of the fact that we do not have this language in our code, we are paying, the ratepayers are paying the $8,000 to repair lines, lateral lines, and other folks' property. I think we need to tighten it up and make sure that the lot owners that contribute to the problem have to pay for the problem rather than put that on the backs of all the ratepayers, and so I think we need to go forward.
Well, before I get the comment from Rob Mastin, I have no problem with this, but for the reason it works in Cayucas, it's proved out, and we do have a problem. We're paying for things we really shouldn't be paying for, and So I'm okay with this as it stands. But we're going to hear from Mr. Mastin. There he is. Rob Mastin.
Greetings, board members and CCSD management. I vowed that I would never do this. I would be a silent observer, but here I am. I am a general contractor here in town, and I happened to peruse the Cambrian this morning just as I picked it up out of my mailbox, and I saw the briefing of what was on the agenda, this being one particular item that jumped out at me. I'm in the throes of a remodel, and needless to say, I have to connect to the sewer. I do have a sewer connection, but it's above grade where I need to reattach a new sewer connection. And as a general building contractor, I'm not authorized to enter into the public utility easement. I have to summons a general engineering contractor. They're authorized to dig, and as well, I'll be pulling an encroachment permit and doing all of the necessary, you know, things that apply. When I consulted a general engineering contractor, two of which, in fact, stated that the connection from the property line out to the sewer itself, to the main, is of a different material than that of what we're required to put in to our homes. We're using standard ABS waste material, which is a dense poly type of a material. At the point at which it enters into the public utility easement, I was told that it goes into a clay crock type pot or pipe. And that said, and having done this work for 22 years and in different places, not outside of San Luis Obispo County, I've never seen that. I mean, it used to be that way. That's what I would consider old school. Because what I've seen is that tree roots and various other items that grow underground and that can permeate that will certainly gravitate towards the clay pipe versus the ABS. And at the point at which you make that connection, it's the most vulnerable point. It's kind of like a demark for when the phone company brings the line into the house, it hits your house, you own everything from that point back. So I think first and foremost, that should be taken into consideration. But I would like to comment on the fact that everything that the board said on this, I fully and completely agree with. This needs to be really looked at very carefully. I think the CCSD needs to protect themselves from undue costs involved in repairing these, but I think there's a step back from that that needs to be considered as far as what the proper material is that's used to connect to that main between where the homeowner's pipe comes to at that point out to the street. Thank you.
Thank you. So what's our pleasure?
I'm looking for three notes. I move that we introducing an ordinance that people can comment on next month, I believe, that we approve the ordinance amending section 5.404.390 of the Cambria Community Services District Code relating to maintenance of building sewers and lateral sewers, provided that the general manager's decision affecting more than a $10,000 obligation to a given property owner be appealable to the board.
Do I have a second? Message is clear. Another motion?
Well, I'll move that we that we introduce ordinance any installation thing, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, and how to do it. And I think that could be just as part of the wouldn't necessarily need to be in the ordinance, but be administrative. Procedures on how to complete the ordinance.
Right. And some of that we're talking about is clearly defined in code. So we just want to review that, and that's going to give guidance too.
Yeah. But if there's a unique situation because of the age of the change, the difference in age of our material as compared to what is current standard usage, there ought to be included in it how you. I'm not sure that if that's not in code, we should put it in some form of code.
So that's just a note to the general manager. Yeah. Has nothing to do with the
that's correct.
Motion. Okay.
As part of the discussion,
sure.
Can I ask Mr. Carmel a question?
I love the tenacity.
Even though it isn't in the code, wouldn't it be easily for us to just bill that customer? And just because it's not in the code doesn't mean that a common practice for us to be billing a landowner or a property owner for work that we've done for them. Help me on that one.
Well, that's more of a it's really not a legal issue. It's more of a procedural issue. I will note that billing doesn't get you your money. I've experienced that phenomenon
okay.
several hundred times.
Right. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have the ordinance. I'm not saying we shouldn't clarify it. But I'm thinking as past practice, we could have easily, you know, pushed some of these funds off to a person and probably prevail. So just a point.
Any further discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carried. If Mr. Crosby will say, can we take a break? We thought this one would be quick, but we might be refreshed before your presentation. Is that okay?
You guys look like you need a break.
Yeah. Thank you. How about we take a 10-minute break? 3 o'clock, we'd be back.
We had to initiate
bail. Yeah, right. We're gonna change this. D gonna be first. We're gonna move item D, 9D. Consider adoption of resolution 2012 granting exception to the hiring freeze of the CCSD fire captain position. And the chief is here to discuss that, as well as the general manager.
Thank you, President Clifton, board members. I'm going to turn this over to Chief
Cliff.
Miller. I'm sorry, it's a Freudian slip.
Perfectly fine.
President McKinnon and board members, I'm going to turn this over to Chief Miller and let him comment on it. And with that, thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, members of the board. I'm here to request that we consider lifting the hiring freeze to replace our captain position for the fire department. As you know, that is a very critical position for me. I utilize my captains much like another department would utilize battalion chiefs or assistant chiefs. I encourage them to manage projects and different program areas within our department. I think it's extremely important also that we move forward with the rehiring and the replacement of this position to keep the morale of the department and the positive momentum that we've generated with some upward mobility opportunity for our personnel as well. I think it really stimulates our reserve program and the entire inner working and morale within our department right now. So I'm here to respectfully ask that we look at moving forward with that as soon as possible. If there's any questions about any of that, I'd be happy to answer.
Board members? Well, I need a motion.
Can I ask one question?
Oh, certainly. Director Robinette.
Yes, Chief. In the discussion, it's probably just a little misleading. It says the fire department currently has three captain positions.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, finally, the headline, item A. Mr. Crosby, this is the fiscal year 2010-2011 comprehensive annual financial report by the Crosby Company.
Good afternoon.
Sorry to keep you waiting.
Oh, the light. Okay. That's the telltale. Anyway, I trust everybody had a chance to look at the financial statements. This financial statement, we've got a 15-page management discussion and analysis. Alan painstakingly put this together. This is a relatively new part of the financial statements where management gets to add their comments and their analysis. And he did a wonderful job as far as doing a comparative analysis between previous year and this current year. And I trust everybody had a chance to read through that. He's made a few changes to it from the last year, which gives a lot of information concerning the layman's approach to these financial statements. Page 2, 3, and 4 are the meat of the financial statements. Page 2 is my report, which is the auditor's report. In this report, we've provided an unqualified opinion, meaning that we did not find anything majorly wrong with the internal controls of the Cambria Community Services District, and there were no exceptions noted even for a management letter. Now, this district is on par with one of my better districts now. The audit went very smooth, and this is the approach that they want with these audits. They do not want to see a lot of adjusting journal entries, and in this case, there were minor adjusting journal entries, primarily housekeeping-type entries. But other than that, the bottom line did not change. I think it changed maybe $1,000 as far as what he's been providing you with interim financial statements versus what's in the audited financial statements. The purpose of this is to provide very accurate interim financial statements for management and the board to analyze throughout the year. Thus giving it more clarity as far as where the district is actually at. So in that respect, the district passes with an excellence. The page 3 and page 4 also are relatively new. They're several years old, but it's a format in which we can look at the they call it the government-wide financial statement. And this is an analysis of the financial statements all wrapped up in 2 pages. The page 3 statement of net assets is like a balance sheet for a for-profit organization, thus utilizing the accrual basis of accounting. Also, page 4, statement of activities, that's the income statement for the district. Before, this information had to be extracted from the old method. Now we have these 2 pages to look at the district with a quick reference. Quick reference to page 3, your balance sheet looks again strong like it was last year. This statement is not broken down, unfortunately, for current versus non-current assets and liabilities, but you can tell by the subheadings of the categories on this statement of net assets what's actually current versus non-current. And when you do a quick analysis, the district is in fairly good shape as it is right now, as of June 30th, as far as their current activities. Now, taking on some major projects or having certain things as far as infrastructure problems in the future could change this drastically. But at this point, the district looks like it's in good financial condition. Page 4, again, I'm bound by the way the powers that be set these up. If this is your income statement, most income statements start with income and then work down to expenses. This one works off to the side with expenses and then works its way over across the page from left to right and then down to the bottom. The important line on this is the third line up from the bottom, changes in net assets. That's your income, net income versus net loss. We're showing a net loss for the district of $656,928. Now, this is other than the current value as to what it will cost to replace the fixed assets and infrastructure of the district. So you're right in there. I think we talked about this in the past as far as the community is relatively limited as far as expanding. So you've got to basically work with the citizens, the property owners in the community as far as a income base. And, of course, we want to keep that at a minimum as far as what everybody can afford and not price everybody out of the community. At the same time, provide services that the people would expect of this community at a fair price. After page four, this is the start of the old method of reporting a governmental type entity. This is the fund accounting method of government fund accounting of the district, with the exception of a few items, the long-term debt account group and the fixed asset account groups are not recorded anymore because they're now recorded on page 3 and 4. So if you're used to the old method of looking at a governmental financial statement, this is where you'd start, page 5. Okay, and then the final section of this report starts on page 13, which is the notes to the financial statements. Most of these notes are pretty much the same as last year, with the exception of page 18. We had a new Governmental Accounting Standards Board pronouncement 54, which changed the terminology as to what we call the fund balances on the government financial statements, which would include the fire department and general accounts. These categories used to be broken down into unrestricted, which would involve reserved and unreserved fund balances, and then restricted. The fund balances now in governmental funds are listed in this on page 18 under these five different categories. So we've made that change to the financial statements. You'll see that change on page 5, which we broke down the governmental funds into these. There's basically two categories. And I look like I'm boring y'all, but that's the big change this year. So overall, I think that this district is being run real clean. I'm impressed with the staff at the district. It's uncommon for this area to have such a little amount of adjustments for the making auditor's adjustments for the books, and I have to commend the district. Any questions? I also want to remind the board, too, that if you have any questions and if Jerry and Alan can't answer these questions, feel free to give me a call. I'm still pretty much available up till the end of January, and then we get hit hard with taxes. I appreciate the fact that we were able to finish this audit a month earlier than last year, and then I didn't have to come up here in the middle of February to I think we were ready for December, though, weren't we? We probably could have presented it December. So any questions?
I do.
Oh, ladies first.
Ladies first.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions. I appreciate your summary of what obviously is a very comprehensive audit. I do have just a couple of things, though. It was a little bit, I have been through this very well. And when you're referring to some of the pages, it was just hard because we go, you know, chronologically all the way through the packet. But I did realize you were talking just about that. That was embedded from your report. So on your page 9, which would be our page 75, just a couple of, just for a brief clarification, really. When we're talking about the changes in fund balance and the revenues and expenditures and then the changes, and at the bottom, it says fund balance at beginning of the year, fund balance at the end of the year. Do you see what I'm talking about?
Right.
And we're talking about fiscal year, right?
Right.
Okay, June 30th, so we're talking fiscal June 30th to July 1st. So we're looking at fiscal year at the beginning of the year is July 1st, 2010.
Right.
And then the end of the year is June 30th, 2011.
Right.
And then just looking...
Enterprise funds like the water and sewer fund. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is just one portion of it. And this is why they changed the format, because a lot of people got confused. They think, oh, this is the balance sheet for the whole district. No, this is just for the governmental.
And I did clarify that.
Okay.
I know that.
Okay,
I was
so.
Just wondering still, though, what is, has there been any discussion on what the difference would be about, Alan?
Go ahead.
There were two large things that happened last year that would account for actually more than that difference. One is we paid off the fire engine tender or pumper. I'm not sure if I'm calling it the right thing, but that was well over $200,000 that was paid early to save on interest. So that created the largest part of the deficit, and then the severance package for the prior general manager. So that this is not a deficit based on normal operations. Those two things were board actions that don't typically happen,
okay,
as far as that goes. Without those two items, it would have been a positive.
So it's
number.
Not a trend, it's an anomaly.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I have a couple of things. One, I spent about 6 weeks in the office once a week, and I echo the fact that we have a very tight ship, I think. Looking at POs and the staff and how they have tight controls on our funds, and I'm very encouraged by that. I just want to clarify three things. One, I believe I heard you say that the depreciation, this is the first time that we're facing depreciation, or is it no?
No, that's the difference between the old and the new. So
okay.
What's included in page 3 and 4 is a depreciation for the district-wide.
Right. Okay.
Versus
so
the old rules where it just encompassed the enterprise.
So it's a different way of approaching depreciation.
Right.
We always have been depreciating.
We've been depreciating,
okay.
Yes.
Also on page 16, your page 16, there's something you talk about encumbrances, and... you're just talking about the year end. I tend to think that our internal policy is not to encumber. Maybe you can help me with that.
The encumbrances haven't gone away. It's just how they're being reported.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can show encumbrances on the financial statements, but these categories are like, remember what I was saying, for government-wide or the government. The government fund activities, the allocations of the fund balance have changed in this
okay.
current year.
And then on page 18, I think that it should be noted that we, as a board policy, for some reason, we have loans going to the water department and to the we have internal loans going back and forth, and we probably resolve those at the end of the year. But it seems like a nightmare, or not a nightmare. Keeps our department kind of doing things throughout the year, and then we resolve them at the end of the year. And these loans from general funds to departments seems like I'd like to see if we can get rid of that. I don't know if you have an opinion on that or.
Well, we've talked about it with the last couple of years, even, and that's been an issue. We let it ride this year, and I don't know if Alan wants to mention anything on that or.
Well, those are based on board policy, or board direction. In recent years, the for basically the capital improvement items, the water fund had no reserves. The wastewater fund had no reserves. Mm-hmm. This year, they both had positive cash flow, so they do have reserves now. But one year, I believe, is $2.5 million. That was mainly constructing Pine Knolls tank, as well as some other things. Pine Knolls being the largest factor of it. There was no money in the water fund, you know, specifically for Pine Knolls. And those years, it was just a transfer, which basically is a free money, so to speak. Enterprise funds are supposed to be run as businesses, right. And obviously businesses take loans all the time. They could have gone to the bank as far as that goes, but then you add interest or whatnot. Obviously it's the board's prerogative how they want to treat that if it happens in the future. I certainly think enterprise funds are supposed to carry their own weight, so I would always recommend in those situations it be loans so and they be repaid.
Right. Well, as we approach a surplus, but I would
losses were completely made whole, and then the rest of the money in theory was for that, but it did end up, the great majority of it did end up going to the water fund by these transfers in subsequent years and or wastewater fund.
Thank you for that clarification, because I was under a different impression. Thank you. And the other thing is, maybe not now, but maybe offline, I'd be interested in your opinion on software that other people, that other departments use, and if you have some success stories or something. You're kind of an independent person that could probably advise us, and I'd appreciate that.
Okay. We can do that.
Yes, Mr. President. I was struck by some of the numbers that jumped out on me on page 59 of the report that we have here, and I think it speaks to some of the belt tightening that you imposed along with Director Clift. There was a decrease of salaries during this period of 10% or $266,000, I think, which was quite remarkable. And in addition, the annual pension cost decreased 18% mm-hmm. during this period of time, and the health premiums decreased by 27%. And I think this type of belt tightening, if you would, was really quite remarkable, because it was badly needed, and I think you should be commended for the efforts that you made.
If I could echo that, too, I would like to say that, too, because while I was looking very carefully at your entire audit and your report, and I had questions, just clarifications, I also wanted to note on page 61, which is your Roman numeral 10, again, I like bottom lines, and I was looking at this, and this does, of course, this is the newer form you're talking about, or the newer approach, I think.
Well, Roman numeral 10 will be Alan's analysis. So,
okay. Well, it's Alan.
Yes.
Well, all right.
Those are numbers extracted from mine.
Wow, very impressive. Because that is exactly what my notes say here at the bottom, looking at the bottom line, and it does echo what Director Thompson said, and that is there are two rather telling comments there. First is, because you have to read it. It's a real flip-flop when you read it, of course. As of June 30, 2011, CSD cash and investments exceeded all debt owed to external entities, while on June 30, 2010, all debts owed to external entities exceeded the CSD cash and investments by approximately $500,000. Mm-hmm. And so at this time, then, at the end of this fiscal year, I think due to your leadership and working with the department and people looking at where we could trim and still be effective, we actually then came out almost $100,000 ahead. So that's a nice turnaround in a year.
Okay.
Director Cliff.
A couple of things, Mr. Crosby. first of all, it's always nice to see that one paragraph that's the only one that counts, right? That says everything's okay. You didn't say specifically, but I would assume from not saying it, there were no anomalies that previously were recommended to be changed that didn't get changed.
I didn't even have to...
I can't remember any last year, but I know, I think year before, your first year, I think there was some questions.
I always throw the admin
But right now, there's no recommendations to change the way we're doing business.
You've got a tight ship here, and you've got some really good staff members, and they didn't even pay me to say that.
The only other thing, and this is just for your own general knowledge, on Note 9, Joint Powers Agencies, you indicate the SDRMA is administered by a board of directors, and then you've got a comma there that says consisting of two members appointed by this. Just cross that out. That doesn't exist anymore. It's now a seven-member board elected by the districts participating.
Okay.
CSDA has no authority on that anymore. So, I assume this is a
this is still
something
a draft
in your computer that's
easy enough to change.
Yeah.
That's why we put draft at the bottom. Otherwise, we'll have to collect them all in.
Yeah. Just someone else, you know, it's changed over the years. And
okay.
Probably the general. Nothing else.
Any further questions? I have one request to speak on this issue. Mary Webb.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Boy, this is really great to hear. I want to congratulate our new general manager for, I think he is really running a tight ship, as you said, and with a new board that really was more devoted to fiscal responsibility. As you know, these were really major $9 million anywhere but being spent on lobbyists, DCEL, and a project that we never voted on. Thank you.
How complete is that report?
I haven't had time to revisit it, but round figures, I do, you know, the settlement was roughly $9 million before the lawyers, took their cut. $1.5 million went right away to the new well, between $1.5 and $1.6 million. And if you can just look at the past audits for the transfers, again, you know, some years there were millions of dollars from general fund to wastewater. I don't believe every penny of what was put into the general fund did go back, but I do know the great majority did. And I could, at some point, right now I'm working on mid-year as well as the second quarter, as well as everything day-to-day and whatnot, but I could, you know, I don't have to recreate it. I have to find it, and I could update it and present that at a future date.
The reason I say that is I've heard that comment, same as what Mary espoused, and it would be at some point.
Yeah.
Again, a quick
and dirty way of looking at it is just look at the audits. The figures are there in every audit.
Yeah. Well, that's the point.
And I'd just like to expand on that ever so slightly. I think your reading of the settlement, I think, bodes well as to really where the money should or should not be used. And the board seems like they had the discretion to be able to benefit the citizens the way they felt compelled to, so or had their will to do so. So I'd like to, if you can send me a link or something, I'd like to read it myself, because I was under that impression, like Mary was, that everything should go to water and wastewater, and maybe that's not the case.
Well, you know, the court decided that, and I compare it to Avila. The Union 76 money built the boardwalk and all that, you know, as to for the good of the community. I don't have a pony in the race, so to speak, but, you know, as far as with the general fund, you can do, you know, you can spend it on parks or water or wastewater. If it went strictly to water, then it can only be spent on water stuff. So wastewater would not have had any benefit of it. That would not have been allowed.
Mr. Crosby, excellent as usual.
Well, thank you very much.
Do we need a motion to accept
the report? If we need a motion
to accept the report,
think that's our custom here.
Okay.
I move that we accept the report.
I second.
Discussion, no discussion. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item 9B, consider adoption of Resolution 1-2012 authorizing the use of water and wastewater standby and availability charges to fund major maintenance and or capital outlay expenditures. General Manager.
Thank you, President McKinnon, board members. This is kind of a internal housekeeping measure that the finance manager and I have discussed and would like the board to consider. It just specifically identifies how we can spend the water and wastewater standby availability charges. And this is the direction in which we want to move, because especially in the wastewater department, there are as we get ready to prepare the mid-year budget adjustment and some of the infrastructure challenges that we've had there and continue to have, and some of the infrastructure needs that are being identified currently at the wastewater treatment facility and the collection facility, from a maintenance standpoint, it's really authorizing us to allocate these funds that were specifically designated before for capital improvements to allow us to expand our capability to use these funds. And so with that, I'll answer any questions that the board may have of Alan or myself at this time.
I move adoption of resolutions 01-2012 authorizing use of water and wastewater standby or availability charges to fund major maintenance and or capital outlay expenses.
Second.
No discussion. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Housekeeping done.
Nicely. Item C. Consider adoption of Resolution 4-2012 approving lot transfers. Citizens Committee recommendation to CCSD Board regarding transfer of lots from Land Conservancy of Slo County.
We have not only the land currently given us to us by the Land Conservancy, but the Fiscalini Ranch. One thing that was really instrumental was the reports that the Facilities and Resources Supervisor Carlos put together, showing, you know, what we have spent on the Fiscalini Ranch and what it takes to maintain that facility, or that almost 500 acres. And at the end of the day, the Standing Committee reached a consensus that it would not be in the CCSD's best interest at this time to take those lots, only from a financial standpoint. We have limited resources. The Facilities and Resources Department and the maintenance of our current lots in the Fiscalini Ranch, those funds come in from the general fund, and there was an analysis done that determined that it would cost a considerable amount of money to just bring those lots up to date, up to our own standards. Since this was a committee put together formed by the board, we thought it only appropriate to bring the Standing Committee's recommendation back to the board, and so you could take formal action and to accept their recommendation, which is not to accept the lots at this time, based on a detailed financial analysis done by the CCSD and staff. Just on a closing note, I think the committee did a great job. They worked really well together. I think there was a lot of good dialogue about the current property that we own, maintaining the Fiscalini Ranch and the other resources that we have. So with that, I'll turn it back over to the board, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions at this time that you may have.
How many lots do we have at the present time?
I'm looking to Carlos. I didn't see that. Several hundred.
Really?
I think, yeah.
Several hundred.
Yeah, I think what it was.
I have no idea.
Several hundred. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I'm trying to think, but you know, you have to think of two. One lot might be Fiscalini Ranch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
And one lot might be a 25 by 70 in Fern Canyon.
That's true.
So you know, this is it's a considerable amount of property.
Yeah, I had no concept.
As chair of that committee, I agree with the recommendations of the committee. However, I also want to go on record as kind of saying that we really shouldn't preclude thinking about this in the future, because the Land Conservancy does act kind of as a, in the past anyhow, has kind of acted as an arm of the district in securing properties that probably meet some of our policies. And what I would like to suggest, which is not going to be part of this motion or anything, but just as an understanding, is that if we devise some kind of a fee schedule that has to do with intent to serve letters and things that involve any kind of commitment to build out reduction, that build out reduction includes taking care of what you have after you buy it. Yeah. And so if we get to that point, I would like to come back to the Land Conservancy and say we do have a funding mechanism now for some of this, and that we do want you to still act in where you can. Because right now their funding mechanism has dried up. One of the reasons it's dried up is because, you know, nobody wants any transfer credits because nobody's building. But I don't want to. It's one of these situations where we had to deal with reality, but at the same time, I don't want it to be seen as any kind of a put down or slap in the face to the Lands Conservancy, because they do a good job.
I would like to only say too that I also did participate on that committee, and that was a very clear message from the committee that we make sure that Bob Hill and the Land Conservancy know how much we appreciate what they have done, what they'll continue to do as best they can. And I certainly would just agree with Director Cliff that as we do look at additional possibilities and funding that come with build-out reduction, that we very much build in maintenance so that we can be and continue this wonderful partnership Sure. we have with the San Luis Obispo Land Conservancy.
I concur with the comments of my two colleagues. I think for me the overriding consideration was the fact that at this point in time, with the funds available for maintenance of our properties, that any additional properties would take away from
question. The Cambria Lodge Hill Restoration Program was funded by the SCC for the past 25 years, resulting in a permanent protection of over 140 tax parcels comprising of 450 legal lots of record. So the answer to your question is 450. And if it's okay with the board, I think it would be appropriate for us to draft a nice letter to the San Luis Obispo Absolutely. Land Conservancy, really thanking them and explaining that, as you said, that we did not take the lots because of the financial upkeep of them, but appreciate all the work they've done, and we're going to look at it. And I'll draft that letter and have you approve it. But I think that's important, too, that we write them and say thank you very much for what you've done and what you'll continue to do for us in the future.
And that we are actively searching for funds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I, when I was listening into the meeting, I think I also got the feeling that it wasn't so much these lots. It's what is the policy of the board for handling the ranch and these lots, and we have to put everything all in a big pot, find out what the number is, and knowing what the number is, let's move forward. As opposed to, because now what we're doing is we're stealing money from the ranch because we don't have a plan. But let's include the ranch and these lots, see what it is, and come up with a policy decision.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we'll have the answer from a person called Jerry that wants to speak. On a first-name basis, that's what happens.
Mine does not have the A in it.
There you go.
A question I'd like to have answered, please. When these lots are transferred to Land Conservancy or transferred from Land Conservancy to the CCSD, do we lose property tax income?
Yes.
We do.
Yes.
thereby jeopardizing the operation of our district because we have fewer dollars available every time a lot is transferred into our district.
We do lose property tax income, Jerry, but it is not the same property tax these things are devalued down because of the conservation easement and everything, that it is not a significant number. I mean, it's a number, and I know to Jerry every number is significant, but it is not a large loss.
I would like
when it transfers over.
Okay, well then perhaps we can project how many dollars, insignificant dollars, we have lost from the transfer of those 450 lots into the district. Because I think if I ask you for a dollar and you gave me a quarter, you'd still be a quarter more poor than you were if you'd given me the dollar.
But I think if you did that report, you would also have to include the money that the Land Conservancy also transfers for, because they have in the past transferred money for maintenance.
And this one calls for $3,000?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that really won't touch much of any lot improvement.
Right, but it's an amount more than what the taxation was before.
I just wanted to go on record to the public that every time a lot is transferred to us, we lose revenue. Thank you.
Can I address that a little bit? Just a little bit. In that I asked the same question, and it was shockingly insignificant. It was like hundreds or maybe a few thousands of dollars. I do agree with you, Jerry, though. If somebody did build on that property, we are losing potential revenue, but the amount of taxes they were paying is very, very little. I mean, in other words, instead of it going into a conservancy, if they never bought it in the first place, yeah, we could have potentially a lot more money. But once it's in the conservancy, it's devalued almost to nothing.
And if I could add to that, it is my understanding anyway that what Bob Hill takes care of mostly with the Land Conservancy are lots that are pretty much not buildable. They are in fire chimneys, in Special Projects 1, Special Projects 2. They are it's just that you wind up with people who know they're stuck. They can't get rid of them. They're paying taxes on them. The neighbors don't want them. And he's able to pick them up. But I think they're like maybe a couple, $3,000 value. Yeah. So the tax is way low. But it's not that there's not, you know, some pennies and quarters lost. That would be true.
Does Land Conservancy pay a property tax on these?
They do pay a property tax.
The Land Conservancy does. Yes. So the ball is in their court. If they don't want to accept any more lots, the property owner will continue to pay his taxes until he finds somebody who would buy the lots. But I don't think it's a responsibility of the CCSD to cut its own throat on income when we have a district to operate. That's just me as a taxpayer. Thank you.
McKinnon and board members, before you is a recommendation from staff to and also a policy and an agreement and a cost reimbursement for special projects, interested party outline. For the board's consideration with regard to special projects. One thing that I wanted to mention, there is language in here that uses the word position, and I wanted just to clarify what the word position means within our municipal code, because I don't want it to automatically assume that it means the word wait list. And on page 134 of our municipal code under section 8.04.020. A position means a parcel within the district which fits into any of the following categories: active service commitments, non-active service commitments, parks, lands, irrigation commitments, and a non-EDU position. A currently valued waitlist position and a parcel with a current valid intent to serve letter. Number six, a parcel with a currently valid connection permit but with no water meter installed. When I came on board as general manager, there was several projects or several requests for items to be evaluated that required quite a bit of staff time. And as
since we have a limited amount of staff and the board really directs the priorities, and then from your direction or from your goals, I direct the staff, I found out that we were really spending a lot of time on particular items that really didn't benefit the CCSD other than just answering questions and doing a bunch of research. But in addition to that, a lot of the things that were being asked of us to consider with regard to these projects, it required legal time and it required council review. And so we were spending our ratepayers' money on those type of things also. As a point of clarification, what we're proposing today is strictly relating to projects, and there was a miscommunication or a misunderstanding, and if I was partially responsible for that, I apologize, with regard to public records request. This does not include that. This is, for an example, and I was hoping we would attach some of the examples, but we did not. If somebody comes in and wants to transfer 11 EDUs to a project that's being proposed on Moonstone Beach, and the 11 EDUs used to belong to a laundromat, but they don't anymore, and now there's 1.5 EDUs. And so those are policy decisions, and those are the type of things that really require research on our part so we can bring back a recommendation to the people that are asking that is legally sound and in the best interest of the CCSD. The other item is that in the past, maybe some decisions have been made that have not involved the board, and I would, especially on large project, I'd like to consider the board to review these and approve them, unless it's something really small, then I don't mind doing it myself. So that's pretty much what's in front of you today. I think it's a common practice within other municipalities and other cities, and I can have a District Council Carmel comment on that. It's something that I've used in other jurisdictions that I've ran, and other cities and CCSDs do it. It's not to charge an excessive amount of money to somebody that ask us basic questions. It's for an in-depth analysis to be able to provide them an answer that's legally sound and in the best interest of the district. On two particular instances with developers that we've met with that are outside of the Cambria area and that are familiar with development language and development agreements in cities like in the Central Valley and things like that, their response was, well, you know, who do I write the check to? So it's a common practice. It's not a culture that has been, I would say, embraced or implemented necessarily in Cambria, and so I can understand why there may be some concerns or some resistance regarding this, but it's something that, you know, as we head down that fiscally responsible track, that we want to be able to recoup some of our staff time. So.
Comments, board?
Yeah. Would you consider some of these requests to be basically using you or your staff as an unpaid consultant?
Yes. And I didn't want to say that, but our primary goal is to be able to provide water, wastewater, parks, recreation, open space, and fire protection to the residents in which we serve. And when a resident or a customer calls up and has a question about their water bill or their waste, making sure that we are automated enough that whatever is being requested from us does not require a great amount of work. We should not charge somebody for just because we have not kept up with our billing software and with our financial software and with our land management software, our CIS and things like that. So we're sensitive, staff sensitive to, you know, understanding that we eventually need to become more automated, so when we are requested information, we should have it readily available, especially relating to APNs and things like that. We should have a database that answers questions. When somebody asks us a question about
you know, what can you break down our consumption into categories of residential, commercial, you know, all those type of questions. It should not be a big special project. We should not be able to come back and say, well, we can't provide that information to you. We, you know, those are the type of things that, from a strategic standpoint, we need to look at and say, okay, you know, we need to upgrade our system so when somebody does ask us a question, we can respond. But more importantly, as an organization, we need to be able to make good, solid decisions based on good empirical data. And they kind of go hand in hand. So there's also a commitment to make sure that we move forward on the other end, too.
Sure. Director Thompson.
So if a citizen comes to the office, and let's just call her Mary, wants some information relative to rates or what have you, that would not fall under this classification of a special project. That's just a constituent service and providing information. We're not going to be calling that a special project, correct?
That's correct. And, you know, I would like to be able to eventually see within the next year or so that if Mary, we'll use Mary seems to be a good word, or Jim or Bob or somebody, comes to the office and says, I would like to have this data, then we could provide it to them. But also as we plan, you know, we plan for our future and we plan strategically, you know, we need to have that information readily available too. We'll get it for Mary or Jim, but it'll take a lot of work. And that's, it shouldn't be that way. I mean, it should be relatively easy to retrieve. We're not there yet, but I think there's a willingness on the board. You know, one of the things that I was always told as well, you know, they're not going to consider that, or they're not going to spend the money on that. And I never bought into that from the day I got here. I mean, I think you understand the importance of being able to have that information at our fingertips. So to answer your question, Director Thompson, is no, we won't charge Mary for those type of things.
And these are types of fees that the county also has in place if special request for project information is given. That it's very very common for other jurisdictions to charge these types of fees.
Correct. It wasn't very structured here before. What I've implemented is we have somebody come in and they sit down with us for an hour and we listen to what they have to say. And then at the end of that meeting, what I request is on your letterhead, make sure that you write down for us a proposal, a detailed proposal on what you're asking us to research for you and what ultimately you'd be asking the board to approve. What's important about that is now we have a source document in place that can go in the APN file. One of the challenges we're running into is that we'll go to an APM file about a particular project that's been proposed in the past under a different name, and there's no documentation in there. And so now what we're going to have is we're going to have notes from the first meeting. We'll have a formal outline of what they're requesting. That'll be sent to the district council for evaluation, and then we'll enter into a fairly simple agreement. And then that agreement will be the funds will be drawn from those, that check that's written. But it is common. You can go to the county, I think, and probably go up and ask them some basic questions. But if you want them to start doing any work for you, they're going to charge you. So it's common.
Yeah, as we discussed earlier, that whether it's a remodel or it's a new home, you do exactly that. You have an introduction and maybe a half hour or an hour gratis. But then you have an application you fill out. And when they conduct work, they get a fee. Yeah. And if you exceed that fixed amount, it's additional. So yeah. It's, I think, a very reasonable proposal that you pose to us.
I agree. I think it's I'm in favor of most of this. I did have two issues. One, I would like to have seen a matrix, because a matrix, not so much that we want to know what the fees are, maybe an hourly fee or something, but the matrix would define what you're trying to do, and it would take some of the concern of the citizens that on the matrix there's nothing.
Gives you a picture so that you have an idea of what are those special projects. And while you may never be able to list all of them, because whoever knows what's going to come up next or through the door, at least you have a kind of a picture people can see, okay, this is over and above, and so you know, if people are asking for general information that they usually get, it wouldn't be on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good communication, you know how it becomes so essential, because otherwise, you know, people misunderstand. So I think a matrix of some kind would be helpful. But again, it can never be complete, because you'll never know.
Right. But I'm not sure we would want to put that into the ordinance or the deal.
No, that's just a procedural
thing.
That's
a procedural aspect afterwards.
Yeah, just a procedural thing.
Can I briefly just comment on that? It'll be tough to draft a matrix. We can certainly try. But the nature of these requests, typically they come as a part of a purchase and sale agreement with a very short escrow. I mean, this is literally what we see. With contingencies, and there's a very strict timeline, and there are questions related to water entitlements almost every time, water allocations, transferability, and they're amorphous. They literally just, or at least till this time, they've just appeared on our radar screen, sometimes unsolicited. They don't even go to Jerry. They'll just sort of show up in the mail, and they're really even hard to wrap your arms around. Oftentimes they're very speculative, and they're not your typical day-to-day transaction. I think that's what I wanted to get out. These truly are unusual, special projects that involve private parties and typically development and short escrows. And I wanted to illustrate that. It's almost, there's a commodity market that seems to have arisen out of the water allocation system. I'm sure you're all aware of that. And this is sort of a byproduct of that commodity market, very strange permutations that require analysis of the code. Typically, the code doesn't really shed a whole lot of light on it, so it'll oftentimes just end up back here in front of you because we can't really make final determinations. But I wanted to give you the flavor of at least, you know, something that's sort of come across our screen in the past. I'm going to cut and paste, but I think you'll get the flavor of how bizarre these things are sometimes. And this was written to my paralegal. It sounds like Mr. Carmay may not be aware of the timing pressures we are under. As of Monday, we're outside our contingency on the purchase and sale. Now, I have no idea what this is about. None. This is my opener. We're outside our contingency period on the purchase and sale of Parcel 1, the subject parcel. Our proposal all along is to not modify the 2009 agreements. We feel doing so would be much more complicated. If we're required to submit to the Coastal Commission or the county, the deal is dead, as we're way too slow then in responding. I could go on, but I think you get the flavor. This just died. We responded and never saw it again because we didn't act fast enough. And really the bottom line there was, who's going to pay for this? This isn't going to bet any. Well, it's not benefiting anyone of your constituents or your ratepayers. And so we kind of just didn't deal with it. And many of these just hit the ground. And it may be that many of them continue to hit the ground, but at least they'll be paying for it as it dive bombs into the ground, because there's a lot of waste that's gone on in the past relative to these projects where we have just done the initial research. And then they either go away, or the deal sours, or the conditions change. We don't really know what happens. But I wanted to sort of underscore the fact these are not typical projects that you find in your day-to-day district activities, the tasks that you're charged with.
I think just some examples so that people can clarify and distinguish between. Because I think you're right. You know, you have to put a sign up in the office, too, and say, your lack of planning doesn't constitute an emergency on our part. So.
Well said.
Where is she?
Oh, she is here.
Oh, okay.
Amanda Rice, comments.
Thank you, President McKinnon. I did send a rather long email. I apologize for the length of it, but there were some very points that I thought were extremely important, I have two main points that I'd like to highlight from the email that I sent out to the board and to the general manager. The first thing is there another avenue to get this information? So if I am a person that has one of these bizarre special projects things, and I hit a wall because there's this fee that I can't really afford, is there another avenue for me to get that information? Because public records are supposed to be broadly construed, and it's not just, you know, this is a piece of paper, it's a public record. If it's public information, and that's one thing, getting a legal opinion is an entirely other thing that I don't really know a lot about, but relating to the information, is there another avenue to get it? Because if there isn't, then you would be restricting people's ability to access public information, whether it's justified or not. That's part of the job, and I think that it, sit back down. Thank you for the time. I appreciate it. There is got to be an underlying reason for suggesting the ordinance. The number of staff people has gone down, but the amount of duties and responsibilities of the district has not. There is a lot to do, and if you look at the amount of money that's been spent on temps, maybe it's time to think about giving the general manager the ability to staff the district in the way in which he needs the staff to do the job. It is his job by state statute specifically to hire and manage the staff of the district. If you trust him to decide what a special project is and how much money that person is going to get charged without having any recourse for appeal to the board, surely you should trust him to manage and hire the staff that's appropriate for the district. Thank you.
Thank you. I might add again that we set policy and the general manager is responsible for operations, and in fact he hasn't asked for any more, and so we move forward. Okay, adoption of 9E. Do we have a motion?
I move approval of item 9E, which is adoption of the resolution 03-2012, approving a special project application and agreement and the administrative policy for cost reimbursement.
I second.
Yeah, I'd like to add a little discussion if I can. It still bothers, or I want to make sure that the general manager may be the gatekeeper as to whether a fee would apply or not apply, but I don't want to see us adopting a policy where he's a gatekeeper and there isn't an opportunity for an applicant to appeal. I'll take this back to the Covell Ranch, my understanding, and this is a little bit off, but it's not. They wanted to do a fire break at the Covell Ranch. It's appealable to the Coastal Commission, but it's only appealable to the Coastal Commission if the county issued a permit. If the county determined no permit was required, it couldn't be appealed to the board. Similarly, I want to make sure that by classifying, by not giving information to an applicant, that request can't be appealed to the board. It's kind of a, you see what I mean? In other words, I think in the past, maybe not the past general manager, maybe so, or the one before, or maybe before, was a gatekeeper. And people would come in and they say, well, I want to do that. You know, I heard this from numerous real estate agents. And so it just wouldn't be considered. So that activity, that request, would fall on the wayside. And if there was an activity where somebody said they wanted to do something special, he might let them through. So it was kind of like a gatekeeper. And it's procedural, but it's interesting. And I want to make sure that that's not the interpretation that the general manager gets. It's a final determination as to how much he might want to charge or whether it's a chargeable activity. But I want to make sure he's not keeping the gate closed or open for certain people. It's just history. It's just what I'm familiar with. But other than that, I don't think we can have a matrix, but we should outline those things somehow of what becomes a special project and what isn't.
And I could report to board on every agreement that I enter into, you know, just as a to address your concerns. I mean, I think the transparency is important, and as it could be in my general manager's report, or I can email you, or, you know, I wouldn't want you to respond to the email, but just to say, hey, just want to let you know, here's the agreement. So I think it's important that I communicate those to you because it is a lot of authority. I understand exactly what you're saying.
Right, and I sympathize with Mr. Carmel in the fact that the previous boards have created the district, have created a monster where there's a brokering out there that that's going on, and we've created it with our shortages. We've created it with a very complex code. I only have 3 years left, but I hope that in 3 years we can make that code very concise so that people know what they're doing and the community in general doesn't have this underlying sales and bartering and trades and et cetera. And one way to do it is to open up the water wait list, but that's a different issue. But we should, if we ever open the water wait list, I'm just going to throw this out, it's not on the agenda, but we should try and fix that so that when the next person wants to come in this town, they know what they're going to be doing and what they're faced with. And we could reset the clock. The clock's 20 years old when we set this EDU thing.
Review of board goals and accomplishments. General Manager.
Thank you, President McKinnon.
Okay. No, I'm
good.
9G. I'm good. No, I'm good. 9G.
I can go over each one if you would like me to. I could spend, because I love to tout the accomplishments of what we've done so far. The goals that were adopted under President Clift for 2011, most of these are completed. Some of them are really close to being done. SCADA facilities, evaluating the facilities and resources, policies and procedures, and evaluating the infrastructure for the sewer, master fee schedule. Those are all, almost all of them are almost all completed. One of the ones, to determine the requirements for lifting the moratorium. I did comment on this. The district council determined that lifting the water moratorium would not be possible until the CCSD has a permitted water project. Seek some additional direction on that. Do you want us to elaborate on that? Do you we can maybe talk about that during the water workshop that we have. So I'm going to assume that I guess I can stop right there and ask, is there any questions about what we have accomplished relating to the goals and why haven't we finished? And I think I was pretty detailed in my report. I wrote a pretty long report on, I'm not trying to have excuses why we haven't completed them, but some of them are not completed. And I was hoping that they would be completed, but they're not. But we're really close to getting them completed. And so I think that all the things that aren't completed should be completed in the next month or two. And so we'll continue those on into 2012.
On my part, I would like to extend my thanks to the staff and to other board members to the staff, because although we set some policy, they did 99% of the work and getting that done. My only, and it's philosophical, in this one of determining the requirements for lifting the water moratorium. And this is purely philosophical, and we probably could talk about it outside open, but since this district council determined, I would have liked that to say district council advised, because I always have the, in other boards I've sat on, I've had council who seemed to be the veto power of the board, and I just don't, that's a philosophical problem, and I have no problem with district council advised that lifting the water moratorium would not be possible without, rather than determined.
Sure.
And that's just a philosophical point. Otherwise, I would suggest that we just receive and file this report. It's a good report, and go from there.
I agree that we should receive and file. On the other hand, I would like to say that one of our goals is to see how we can get more guidance on how we can lift the moratorium. In other words, I agree with the statement that it's case law on new water that's required. On the other hand, I think that there's been a lot has gone on in the last 10 years as to our consumption, our other possible water alternatives, and also from the state and federal level, sewer to tap and a lot of other things, even though case law says it's not new water, maybe we should challenge that particular definition. And I think that the government and regulating bodies are more receptive to recycling and reuse, and perhaps we should push that envelope. And I think if this board is willing, we should advise the stretching that envelope. It's just a comment.
Council looks very glum.
No, it's just this isn't really a specific agenda item, but I'd be glad to comment on that. First of all, yeah, that's just that's my advice, is that that's what 358, I think it is, of the Water Code says. If you told me to lift the moratorium, I'd tell you there are some hurdles in the way, and we'd lift the moratorium. I mean, you know, it's that simple. I respond to my board, but I give the best advice I can.
Yeah.
And I do think there's room in there. When I'm looking at lifting the moratorium in the context that you asked me, it's lifting the broader moratorium, not issuing a limited amount of additional connection permits, if that's the direction the board wants to go. I think there are probably resources and ways to navigate through that channel.
Yeah, I guess philosophically I take the position that
this in part has been a willingness on the CCSD's part to improve customer service by extending office hours. The CCSD actively seeks to interact with the community and stay connected to activities, meetings, and events by being present during community-related functions, thus showing a strong desire to let all of our stakeholders know that the CCSD cares about the quality of life for all Cambrians. So those were additional goals and several additional goals that I'd like to thank the staff for accomplishing. And then President McKinnon asked me to list future challenges and opportunities for the CCSD, and if I could just spend a few minutes to go over these. Secure a long-term, reliable, supplemental source of water for the community. I think we all agree on that. Fund and implement an aggressive conservation program that would allow for a demand offset relating to water usage of 2-to-1. I can elaborate on that, but I would be here the rest of the evening. So work collaboratively with Cambrian stakeholders in the County of San Luis Obispo and the County Coastal Commission to strategically develop an agreed-upon plan that would result in allowing lot owners to come out of the wait list. Number three, reevaluate current connection fees. Number four, address financial sustainability of employees' salary and benefits costs while maintaining the highest level of service by recruiting, hiring, training, and retaining qualified and dedicated employees. Number five, maintain fiscal responsibility as it relates to operational costs for administrative services, fire, facility resources, and water and wastewater. Number six, evaluate current investment policy to determine if changes are need to be made to incorporate short and long-term strategic, and should say financial planning. Number seven, develop a reserve policy as part of the 2012-2013 budget process, and I touched on that a little earlier and why I think it's important we do that with the $3.9 million we have. Number eight, address key infrastructure needs and prioritize those needs based on limited resources. Number nine, address future funding for key capital improvement and infrastructure needs. Number 10, research and make recommendations to the board regarding the replacement of the district's financial and billing software in addition to parcel management software. And the last one is evaluate and improve and amend, where necessary, the CCSD Municipal Code to address short and long-term strategic needs of the CCSD. This should specifically be to the 800 section on the water code. I mean, we could tackle this, I think, relatively easily and address it prior to some of the other things, so we could work through some of these challenges. But those are just things that we can discuss at a later. But these are things that I think are important to the district. And they're not all inclusive. I probably sure left out some key ones. Mr. President?
Got a lot of work ahead of you.
Mr. President, can I comment on that? First of all, it's 4:20, and we're already into an hour's worth of overtime for our guys out there.
We're looking at your record here.
And I think Jerry's done a fantastic job, but I'd like to recommend that the number 10 and number 11 be moved to number 3 and 4. The research and make recommendations regarding replacement of the district's financial billing software and additional to parcel management software, I think, is number 3. I think we'd have a lot more answers for people. We'd be able to prepare our reports. I think that's a very, very important thing, rather than being that far down on the list.
Yeah, these aren't prioritized. Okay. I kind of threw them all against
Good.
The wall. And
okay, and the last stick. One. And the last one, I think, is also one that should be higher priority. That's just a guidance or my opinion. That's just all it is. And I think we should file and whatever, file the report. I recommend that.
You receive the report.
Receive and file.
No action required.
Right.
If I could just, I'll just add a comment, although I hesitate to add any more comments. This is meetings aren't usually this long, right?
Oh, this is just the beginning. Still
anyway.
Light. Yeah, we go for
anyway.
Hours.
Time does fly. But I'm glad to know that this is not all, of course, this is not all inclusive. I do believe, because it does come, of course, at the end of the day here, hopefully, that these are really key things, of course, that we really need to have some time, almost as a workshop session or something, so that we all can brainstorm and add to it, too, and the prioritizing. And so I don't know how that might work, but it might be good to just make this almost a single topic sometime. It's just a thought.
It's one we've batted around for several years now, the ability to discuss, and everything has to be on the agenda before we can mm-hmm. have a dialogue begin. So it's something that I guess the members should think about, and maybe we have a method, but I'm not sure exactly what it would be.
Yeah, it would be nice. Just, I guess I'm looking at the input because we're always looking for funds. And one of the things that comes to me here immediately, but it's not a complete list. It's a very good list. But
have gone to the purchase, the lot consolidation.
Yeah.
I think that's where the majority of that money's gone. Above and beyond what the expenses are.
Right, our remodel fees go to, they go for paying the title company for lot mergers, and then they can go for, the way the ordinance is written or the resolution was written, to purchase lots as part of the build-out reduction program. So it's specifically supposed to be designated for that purpose. One of the conversations that staff had amongst themselves was to consider possibly amending or expanding that to use it for conservation measures.
Right.
So those are some of the things that we need to talk about.
It's a good discussion item.
Good discussion to have.
Right. Maybe Mr. Carmel can help me with this one. I can see having conservation fees maybe with a transfer of a property, but we're not land use. We're a water department. So I don't know how far we can walk that walk where we can start extracting fees from somebody because we don't do land use.
Yeah, we need to just have it as a topic sometime because we plan to extract major fees on the wait list, when that finally happens. But in the meantime, the construction in this town, and other people are essentially building homes,
mm-hmm.
Is pretty much sliding under the radar. And so,
other than county and school.
Well, there's always all those fees that everybody will face on that type of thing. So it's just maybe something to kind of be thoughtful about and at least know more about and have it as a conversation sometime.
Well, we have a lot of opportunities, as the general manager has listed. And one of the things that is troubling somewhat is to prioritize and to realize that we're only going to accomplish a certain number of those hopeful ideas. And that brings us into our next and last section, which is the 2012 board goals and assignments. And I put together just kind of carry-on of what we've had over the last perhaps 3 years and what we did last year. And also put down directors' assignments. So at the very outset, I'd like to ask you, after reviewing it, do you have any problems with what we do have? And then we can discuss some of the, very briefly as we hit 4:30, the goals that have been stated. Any problems with the assignments of the various goals? Hearing none, let me just, you're going to have one, I know, but in any event, we do have a requirement, I think, to support the Army Corps in what they are attempting to do and to somehow finish off the supplemental water supply. And I don't know what all that's going to take, but that is a board as a whole. We'll continue as we did in the previous year. The Stewart Street tank and rodeo grounds, I think, is going to carry on its own as we go through the entire environmental review process and then the design. SCADA is one of the items that was a concern to me in the fact that you want to go out now for an RFP after the company that was most knowledgeable, Rockwell, coming in with, and I don't know the value of it, but a very exorbitant proposal, price-wise. And I think that has been kicking around for 3 years. It's been dormant for many more than 3 years. And SCADA is obviously important. I'm just a concern that we just bring that to a head. Do we, like a stock, do we drop it? Do we continue with it? Do we have a disposition of it other than now going for another RFP that may yield nothing more than more money than Rockwell themselves?
Yeah, I think I
don't have the knowledge on that on that project.
I think that based on the correspondence that we've had with working with David Hirsch, it'll be a fairly simple process to solicit maybe an RFP isn't the right terminology, but solicit a request that would allow people to firms to bid on the installation of this thing. You know, the quote we got from Rockwell was just insane. I mean, it was so we know that is
what the cost was exorbitant. Now we're going to miss Mr. D'Amico more than we think. He's a talented engineer, very very knowledgeable. And his approach, and as agreed with the general manager, was to go to the person that knew most about it, have a turnkey package, so that he was responsible for every subcontractor and so on and so forth. And that's the way a good project manager does it, and I'm sure that's what he's doing in New York. That's why he's doing it. He's excellent at it. On the other hand, we're a small little community, and to ship people up from L.A. and have them dig ditches and pay them per diem and put them in a hotel because that contractor knows that subcontractor and he's responsible for every switch and light, he packed all of that into his bid, which was exorbitant, but because he was given that guidance that he was going to be a turnkey guy and he was responsible for every shovel of dirt that came out of the ground. So we now are going to try and see if we can get local people to handle the dirt digging, the wire pulling, and so on and so forth, and parcel it out into not a turnkey application, and maybe come up with a little bit of a smaller phased approach so that this year might be 150, another year might be another 150, and another year might be another 150, and we'll do it for 450,000 instead of a million that could have been done probably in a matter of 4 months. But I don't think we have the resources, and I don't think the community needs it. When it did come up, and this is my opinion because Frank's gone. So we were carrying on some ad hoc committee meetings after that, and I think that might be an approach that we can bring to the board that might piecemeal it out. When we had the sewer spill, I asked Jerry or Mr. Gruber, I said, would SCADA have prevented that sewer spill? No. SCADA is the data acquisition that Mr. D'Amico wanted so badly, is to be able to optimize the pumps and get data on what hours of the day are usage happening. But we're not New York. We don't have a hospital to support. So if power's out for 3 hours, we can send somebody up to this tank and that tank, and you know, what are we going to save? Certainly, we're not going to save $1 million. Would we save $150,000 if we get a warning that we have a tsunami? Did we want SCADA? Yes. But the sewer spill and some other things that happened, SCADA wouldn't have changed a hill of beans.
So you're going to be the project engineer?
No.
No, I mean,
I'm going to get together with Mr.
Well,
Mr.
My point is
and come up with a plan.
Mr. Gresham's, the CCSD.
Well, that's fine. I encourage Frank.
So to cut it to the chase, you will have a position that you can bring to the board.
Within 3 months.
One way or the other.
Within 3 months, yeah. By the end of April. By April 15th, by tax day, I think we should be able to bring something to the board. Oh, you're not there. Okay.
May Bob comment just really briefly? I know it's late, but I just...
Yeah, go ahead.
What we have so far is we have, the completed design by CyberNet, and we talked a little bit about some of the difference in semantics, like a request for proposal...
Mike.
Sorry, can't
Mike.
Hear me?
Okay. Mike.
Okay. I'm hoping you can hear me now. My light's on here. Generally, just to clarify the some of the phrasing used, requests for proposals are typically for professional services. So if you wanted to hire a project manager or an engineer to help with design, that's when you generally go out with a request for proposals. An invitation for bids is what you do to get actual installation, from contractors, those types of bids. So what we talked about is packaging up the technical design work that CyberNet did a number of years ago. Basically, the past staff pre-purchased the equipment, making sure that's part of the information provided to the bidders and making it very competitive as far as an invitation to bid. This does create more of a headache because it's not turnkey, and the district pre-purchased the equipment, so issues that could come up is, okay, maybe the equipment has lapsed in having the latest software upgrades on it and so forth. District will just have to wrestle through that as opposed to loading it all onto Thomas Klein's company to bring people up and so forth, just the way Director Berenger described it.
Sure.
So there's trade-offs involved. Mm-hmm. But the intent is to make it as competitive as possible, and that way you would lower the cost using more local firms to do some of the basic work.
Understand. So.
Can I just add one thing to that? That was something that I do wonder about upgrades, because this has been here.
The actual training pulled out separately. But the idea would be to keep it as a separate package then and not have the markup associated, which you usually get with a general contractor. So there's trade-offs, but training is definitely have to be part of it.
Training and then support. But right. Again, April will be the we're bringing back to the board, and we can discuss it again.
Okay.
Very, very quickly, I thought it was important to develop and implement a short-term wastewater infrastructure project because of the design weaknesses that we've uncovered and the ages of the elements within the system. It is the one that is crying out for support and attention. So from that standpoint, I thought the general manager could move in that direction and really put an aggressive program that I think you already know what you need to have done.
Correct. And we'll be bringing, one of the things that I included in my goals is for 2011 is I included all of Mike Finnegan's maintenance reports for the entire year to give you a snapshot in time of all the work that's been done. I plan on bringing two or three other items to you in February regarding wastewater, which SSMP Phase 2 and 3, and some major infrastructure components that I want replaced next month. So you'll see that continue to move forward.
And somewhere along the way, within the budget process, there's going to be competing for funds, and there's where we would have the prioritizing of the different goals. So which one wins out from the dollar standpoint? Again, very quickly, the CCSD fee schedule, this has already been in work with Vice President Thompson and Director Berenger, and combining two of the previous ad hoc committees into one, I think, makes a lot of sense. Implement salary and benefit policy with myself and Vice President Thompson. develop and implement a revised conservation program. I think this is one, as we have breathing room, as our world is becoming a little bit more stabilized in Cambria, that we need to reinvigorate a conservation program. It goes hand in hand with getting rid of this moratorium. And I think there's a great many things that have happened technology-wise that can really get some significant improvements in our water usage. And to almost to Jerry's comment, where we are kind of a water company and our product is water, and what are we trying to do? We're trying to reduce our revenue versus increase our revenue, but that's the nature of the game. We have that responsibility. So, Director Robinette, do you feel comfortable in that area? I thought you'd be excellent in it. Good. Okay. Any future reorganization in the CCSD Fire Department, whatever that means, I know Director Clift has been involved with that for years, and Vice President Thompson. So.
And that 6-month duration, I think, is appropriate, and we'll bring it to a head.
Great. Here's one that is really, I think, is again outside the box. Develop potential supplemental water supply alternatives with myself and Director Clift. There's things that maybe shouldn't be discussed because they don't have any merit at this point, but they're kind of ideas that have been floating around, so that if an ad hoc committee that can look at some of these things and, of course, bring it back to the board as soon as something that makes sense. And, again, 6 months duration or less, perhaps. Develop the operating budget. For continuity's sake, the new Director Robinette and Director Clift. Your area. I know that Director Barringer would be, but you're going to be busy with other things as well. Someone has mentioned lifting the water moratorium as a goal, and that's something we can discuss at a later point, or do we want to put that into some context at this point? Lifting the moratorium in 2012 as a goal?
I can't see why that wouldn't be a committee of the whole. I can't see why I think that's a unified vision from the board. So,
but do we want to make it as a firm goal? So if it's a goal, it should be reasonable to do. It should be something that the staff would support and accept as reasonable as well.
I think there's a couple of goals that you could say as just goals.
Yeah.
And one of which would be?
I put in future agenda items, requests from the board members to receive feedback and direct staff to prepare information, et cetera. Things that perhaps have been on your mind and you really think we need to have a dialogue about it.
I would like to see you put on for discussion and potential action a revisit of the vote in 2004. As to determining what water, you know. Anyhow, a whole discussion of that.
Right. The total sizing of supplemental water resources that we're
targeting.
This is
the targeting. 18 units and that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. In other words, okay. What is our target?
Well, I think it leads to that kind of discussion, but I think we keep kicking this around and we keep fooling around with it, and we see it in print different places everywhere, and I think we need to say this board's policy either affirms or rejects that position that was taken in 2004.
Great. I think it's great. Don't go anywhere. Oh. We have one more. Jim Webb.
I was wondering why you're waiting around, Jeff.
Yeah. Right to the bitter end.
Hi, Jim Webb from Cambria. I'm sorry to keep you. I feel like it'd be remiss if I didn't congratulate you on changing the tenor of discussion with this board and this staff. I think you guys and gals have done a great job as far as that's concerned. I did want to mention on the goals for 2012, It was noted earlier that the geology under the flag lot up there near San Simeon probably hadn't changed much over the last few years. I'm pretty sure that's true. But one thing that has changed is the regulatory landscape offshore with the creation of the Cambria State Marine Park and with the development of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. And while I'm heartened to see that the consultant and the Corps will be looking at water alternatives that lie outside the State Marine Park area, I'm fairly confident that some of those alternatives probably will lie within the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. That being the case, it behooves the district, I think, to take seriously the guidelines for desalination that were adopted by the Marine Sanctuary and are available online if you ever want to take a look at them. Two of the things that they look for prior to allowing outfalls and intakes within the sanctuary are a concerted effort at conservation and recycling. And so to that end, my comment is that in the 2012 goals, the word recycling never occurs. And in particular, I'm talking about water recycling and efforts that the board could make to demonstrate a commitment to recycling and therefore, during some future water project, be able to demonstrate that they had made a good faith effort to accomplish it. To that end, I would offer two alternatives, which I know you're just excited to hear about here late in the day. One was went to the Upper Crest restaurant recently and went to use the bathroom, and I was kind of surprised when I saw that it was a waterless toilet. And I'd never seen such a thing and didn't really know how it worked, but it worked. Yeah. And so I just offer that as an example of something that would save water and could perhaps be used in our public restroom facilities. One of the other items I've mentioned before is the fact that many Cambrians travel to San Simeon to pick up non-potable water at their own expense, at their own detriment, perhaps, to lugging it around, and bring it back to Cambria to use for irrigation purposes. And I would just encourage some creative thinking about how this board could, in 2012, perhaps codify that process and offer incentives for people to have storage, perhaps even help with offset the cost of delivering non-potable water, because it's that the one of the uses that really hurts us is that 40% increase in water use during the driest months for landscaping. Sure. And there's no reason we can't use non-potable water for that purpose. Anyway, with that, I'll let you go. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, what do you have there, Director Brown?
I was going to say that on the goals, develop and implement a revised conservation program, could we say, would it be the pleasure of the board to say revised conservation and recycle program when in that ad hoc
sure.
committee of number three? That's just a suggestion.
Just more
potable water, and it doesn't involve putting purple pipe all over town. It would, if, for example, I use landscape water in the summer, but if I had an incentive to purchase a tank and I had a way to refill it that didn't involve me going to San Simeon and picking up the water and filling it up myself, I'd probably do it. And it seems to me that those kinds of incentives are things that are part of recycling and show a commitment on the part of this board to encouraging it.
Okay. So. Thank you. Because I don't think toilet to tap has a whole lot of support
even though it's been used.
Could be as complicated as that, but it could be as simple as an old water truck that we bring down here on Friday afternoon at Farmer's Market and let people take whatever they want. That's the most simple. Now, there was discussion years ago I think it was a $20 fee or something for people who would put in a 3,500 gallon tank and a connection at the street, and then CCSD would charge them for they had to take 2,000 gallons, I think it was, and it was like $20. and we would subsidize the rest.
That's cool.
It died because I don't know why, but at the same time, that's the kind of an idea that might come back to
right. And for me, when I've taken that trip to San Simeon and took that truck, that Highway 1 part is the part I don't like driving. I don't mind driving around the neighborhood, but boy, that when I'm on Highway 1 with, 700?
Yeah.
800
pounds a
gallon. Yeah. 8 pounds a gallon, 300. You're talking about, 1,000 pounds, 1,500 pounds?
Yeah.
That's a lot, and that scares me. I still do it, but.
Yeah. Near Austin Mini?
No.
Good. See, there is conversation going on. See, Rob? Thank you. Well, with that, I think we're done. Meeting adjourned.